called The Psyche. And this book covers quite a bit of interesting information. Among the fascinating things that Billy learned throughout his lifetime, as well as through his contacts with the Pleiadians and other races, was a lot of information about how we think, what spirituality is. We've already listened to some tapes on about the Talmud Emmanuel, about Jesus and Emmanuel. And if you've listened to the tapes on creation, now you have some foundation for the Pleiadian philosophy about what a creation is, how it creates a universe, and how it creates life forms, and how we ourselves, our humans, go through those life cycles. So we're providing a foundation for moving up to the point of day-to-day thinking. Okay. Now we're moving into an area, after listening to the meditation tape, you've got some ideas now psychically about how your psyche works, how your brain works, and the different parts of ourself, the material side and the spiritual side. We've gone over that a little bit. So we're going to go a little farther into that now and start trying to apply some of this information to our day-to-day living. And most of this is brought out, like I say, in this book written by Billy called The Psyche. And it has, of course, to do, it's in direct meaning to the psyche of the material mind, which is the storehouse for all of our feelings and thinkings about ourselves. It's, you know, it's the persona, it's how we perceive the world, so to speak. So that was the title for his book, but it deals with a number of things, going over memory, concentration, how to actually learn how to think and so forth. And so all of this is about developing a correct psyche in your material life. You know, most of us go through our lives, you know, a little bit confused, trying to figure out why we're here, what we're doing, things. And if you just look around you, notice all the people that are, you know, reacting strangely to different things in life. They somehow will get frustrated or angry or whatever, or they get depressed. You know, surely you must know some people that are very positive and everything just seems to go well for them. They seem to be very lucky in life and they always seem to have an attitude that serves them well, so things go their way in life. They're always up. Okay, and other people seem to be sometimes always kind of depressed. And these are the people that can't seem to ever do anything right. And they always have an attitude like, oh, woe is me, it just won't work, or I don't know what to do, and so forth. And of course, we're all different, so we're all at varying stages and mixes of attitudes. But that attitude we form about life, that big attitude that's in our psyche, all those feelings and thinkings that we get, project really how we deal with life. And that's what this book is all about. At the very beginning of the little book on the psyche, Billy has a little thing on spirit healing to define what that is, because it starts to set the framework for the things that we're going to talk about and brings up some important points about what a spirit actually does. Spirit healing. You've probably all heard that phrase. It you know, indicates someone who heals someone else by virtue of the spirit. Spirit healing means healing through the powers of the spirit. Powers of the spirit, that's an interesting phrase. We have a material conscious mind. We're beginning to understand that we also are spiritual beings, but does the spirit actually have power? Yes, it does. And that power is created through a knowledgeable clarity of thought, where we manifest thoughts and feelings and ideas, and the spirit becomes strengthened in that. It gains in its personal force through power of thinking, through power of knowledge, through power of wisdom. So when we say the power of the spirit, which means that we are, using a today's word, programming the spirit through wisdom, knowledge, and clear thinking, we begin to program the spirit to be able to have knowledge of its own and grow. It, of course, already has some wisdom. It has the wisdom, the accumulated wisdom of previous lives that we can build upon. Now we're going to add new things to it, new thoughts, new logic and so forth that make the spirit even stronger. And as we start, you know, addressing the things in life, the difficulties and problems of life, using our spirit, which cannot be ill, cannot be logical and so forth, when we can call upon that great power of our spirit, which also has the force of being able and the ability to be able to call upon the force of the universe within itself, then gee, we can deal with things very strongly. This is real power. When we have power even beyond ourselves, power that we are capable of, call upon this universal power, the power of creation that is out there and available to all of us. So when we say spirit healing means healing through the powers of the spirit, we're talking about being able to provide the power through the use of our spirit, provide logic and ability to someone else that they can kind of use, kind of borrow, kind of get themselves jump-started to heal themselves. So you can activate the spirit of a sick person. A sick person, one who has, say, some sort of illness of the liver or kidneys or something like that, some sort of illness of the body. It might even be an illness just of the mind, some sort of sickness in their psyche. You can help that person. And what you do, actually, is through the force of your own spirit, through the clear thinking, logical power of your spirit, you can activate their spirit. Because, see, they actually heal themselves. You must motivate and make their spirit work for themselves. Because in most cases, quite a few cases, they're probably sick because of the ill negative thoughts in their spirit. They're probably using their spirit improperly, if they're using it at all. Or they're thinking so negatively and depressively they may have been causing the illness. But at any rate, their spirit is probably down and they're not knowledgeable or aware that they can actually use their spirit to correct an illness that's within the body. So you can motivate and make their spirit useful. This is going to require a lot of brain work on their part because the fact is they have to do the actual healing. You know, it's possible that yourself, you can lend a hand, so to speak, some power of your own spirit through logic and clarity to get them started and so forth, but they have to want to do it themselves. There are people, of course, among us who are stronger at this than others. There are people whose force of spirit sometimes is so strong, they can almost effect a cure or healing all by themselves. By the pure nature of their own spirit, they can actually cause another person's spirit to do things, to actually set things in motion in another person and cause the healing. But what they're actually doing is using the other person's spirit to do the healing. It isn't their own. It's through the force of their own spirit that they're able to direct and motivate the other person's spirit. Okay? So the other person actually has to do the brain work. He must heal himself. You can start the ball or the rolling, give a push in the right direction, whatever. You can also use the magnetic field, your auric field around yourself, to also affect people. This is where hands-on healing comes into play. This is also another way that can be effective, where the power of your spirit. We're going to talk more about the aura later on, but just for our short little story right here, bear in mind that the aura projects the thinking of the individual, that who you are spiritually is projected in your aura. If you are a person of great power of spirit, clarity and logic, then it not only shows in your aura, but it affects the aura as far as the magnetic field and the actual frequencies in the aura. So your aura itself can come in contact with the aura of another person and serve that purpose also as to actually heal. This is a very good way to get rid of headaches and things like that. If someone's just kind of feeling down or a little achy and painful and so forth, you quite often can just blend your aura with theirs, and that's commonly done like usually with the hands. Hands are great areas of sensitivity. You can move your hands into the aura of another individual and hold it there for a period of time, and generally a headache will probably go away. What's happening here is the frequencies. The frequencies of your aura, of your power of spirit, then, are actually moving into the aura of another person and causing a realignment of the magnetic field of their aura, which has an effect on their body. So that's entirely possible also. The person, though, has to accomplish his healing on his own through the power of his own spirit. And this is going to require an awful lot of neutral, positive, what we call mental attitude, which I'll explain more on, but basically it's what's called balanced thinking. Where the person then, the force of his spirit doesn't think negatively or positively, it thinks neutral. And that's referred to as neutral positive, meaning that by thinking neutrally, you're going to have a positive effect on yourself. Okay? The spirit healer or healer is someone who through mental powers is able to help or even cure an ailing person. In most cases now, this is not a professional person. Generally, on this planet right now, professional people who aspire to be doctors, psychiatrists, and psychologists and so forth, generally do not subscribe to what we're talking about, which would be referred to as metaphysical thinking or spiritual thinking. They generally don't use these techniques. The reason for that is, if you go to college in our country or most countries, that you have to take the courses that they prescribe in order to get the degree. If you don't get the degree, then you can't have the title. If you don't have the title, you can't get customers. In order to be a doctor, you must take certain classes. You have to subscribe along with the standards set by the medical institution of whatever country you're in. And when you put your shingle out on the door, then you are given a set of guidelines by which you can operate. if you wish to, you know, remain with the title that you have. If you want to be Dr., you know, Woodworth or whatever it is, then you have to, you know, use the methods that were you learned in college, and you have to follow the guidelines prescribed to you by your American Medical Association, which tells you which drugs that you can sell and prescribe, which ones that you can't. Which kinds of curing or healing techniques that you are allowed to use and which ones you cannot. This is dictated to the doctors. So the doctors in most cases don't have a lot to say so. Especially in today's market, in today's society in America, where we're so attorney crazy. If a doctor were to actually try something, you know, border science idea, like try to affect cancer with ozone or hydrogen peroxide or one of these border science ideas, which do prove, you know, quite useful in many cases, he can lose his license. Oddly enough, there are many doctors even in jail right now because they tried things like this. So it's you know, our legal system leaves something to be desired in this area for sure. It's a shame that many people, I would say, many potential cures and ways of making people feel better are suppressed in our country strictly out of economics. But in any case, that's the main reason why most of these doctors don't use these methods. The other is just ignorance, and by that I mean ignorant of the information. These are not ignorant people. By the most part, people who, you know, put their energy into becoming a professional doctor, whatever, are very intelligent people. They have to be to pass all the classes and gain the knowledge. Okay? But on the other hand, because that there is no professionalism really in spirituality and metaphysics and so forth, there are many people claiming that they can do things and are complete charlatans. We have to watch out for that also. Because there are no requirements, licensing, studies involved to go out and call yourself a spirit healer. All that's really necessary is you go down to the local print store and get some cards made up and maybe tell somebody that you can cure them, and they'll say, sure, give it a try. They figure they got nothing to lose because you're not going to stick anything in them, make them take anything or whatever. And generally the person will, you know, do some form of whatever they do, but most people really are not aware. They probably mean well, but they're probably not very effective either. So we have to be careful of unscrupulous people who would take advantage of us. It's one thing if someone who believes they have some ability or some power to help another, because actually we all do, if they're not charging for it, then it's fine. But beware of the individual who suddenly is charging a lot. If they are, let's get some references. If someone wants to charge heavily to perform some sort of spirit healing on you, I would suggest you talk to someone else they performed that on and make sure in your own mind that you have the potential of probably getting some good satisfaction here. Healing through prayer, is that possible? Yes, it is. The reason is that we talk about the force of the spirit, okay? Well, if you believe in prayer, if this has become part of you and you put great strength into that, then your spirit does reinforce that. So even though prayer generally is a call outward, out to some other source, a person who believes strongly in that actually can have effect on themselves. So prayer can be also a potential way of helping one's own self. Okay, the information that Billy put into this book, this is not a book like a story or whatever, and it's as a book, it's frankly not even written that well. By that I mean it's not laid out well, and it is just 60, 70 pages of information about the spirit, about how we heal and protect ourselves, and about how we form the spirit, and you know how we develop that psyche, that feeling and thinking center of our material brain. So I'm going to go through the ideas, and towards the end on the next tape, I'm going to give you some ideas on how you can go about through step-by-step developing these lot of things yourself. That's not in the book, so I'll have to kind of like, I'm going to go through that and add that part on myself. Billy's book does not go to the extent of actually showing you practically how to do things. There are no exercises and so forth. There are simply explanations of what you have to learn. And that's not really very simple, as you're going to see and hear about. There's a lot of new ideas contained in here. So I'll try to provide you some sort of explanation of exercises and examples you can go through to actually work on these things at yourself. Okay? The purpose, of course, of this information and this little book that he wrote was to achieve health, a good life, and trust in yourself. To achieve these goals, we're going to have to follow a path of knowledge and the practical uses that it brings about. Your recognition and knowledge derived from this information will provide a correct way of thinking according to the laws of nature. Now, this may be new to most of you. We talked earlier about the laws of creation, the laws of creation primarily being concerned with the formation of the universe and all life within it, and the growth, expansion, and contraction of the universe. These laws or logic, in other words, dictate exactly what the universe is doing and all life forms in it. It dictates, you know, how the life form like us lives in a material and a spiritual life. It lays down the matrix or the logic of how everything functions in the universe. Then within that, there is nature itself. And nature has its own set of guidelines and rules that also pertain to other things. And what we're going to be talking about here, and what Billy refers to as these laws of nature, is how beings like us react with our environment, our surroundings, and the nature that we live in. There are certain things which are laws, or we should say logic, by which the nature itself works. So what we're going to do is we're going to work on achieving a correct perception of life in the world around us. And this information can be applied to our daily life, and that's how we're going to get results. This is very practical information. I wouldn't consider it theory, at least that's what Billy says. He considers this very practical, absolute, logical information. So it's the sort of information that you're going to listen to. You'll listen to an idea or two, and you probably want to stop at each point, think about the ideas that I'm going to explain to you, apply them, try them out, and make them part of yourself. If you're currently following ideas or standards that psychology lays down about how to live your life and how to think, you're going to find a lot of differences here. I would suggest after listening to this tape, if you decide that you want to follow these concepts and principles and work on your own spiritual development, that you set aside any other particular ideas of psychology and psychiatry that you may be using at the time. Set those aside because, as you're going to hear, they are not in agreement with this way of thinking. Of course, on the other hand, I'm always very open-minded. You may come up with some great mixture of psychiatry and spirituality, which could be a major breakthrough for all of us. So if you do, let me know about that. After all, an open mind is a sign of intelligence. Okay. The lesson on hand is the teaching of the absolute cause and effect of the logic of the laws of nature. When you have what are called laws of anything, they're actually logical things. That means the way things work. So there's always cause and effect going on. Because something is so, because that's just the way it actually is, and there's cause and effect all throughout life, nature, and throughout all of the universe. What we're really after here is we're going to learn how to kind of maintenance of the mind. We're going to learn how to control our thinking and ourselves so we can control our destiny, our future. Okay? To be successful this, you're going to have to put some time into it and think about these ideas. You're going to have to make kind of a study of it. First, you're going to learn a lot about yourself, about reality, of how to observe the world very clearly and see it really is. You're going to have to develop not only the habit, but the normal process of keeping an open mind about things and allowing information to come in. You know, it's when we get closed-minded, when we lock the doors on ideas and don't let other information in, that we get into trouble. Closed-mindedness can be caused by a number of things, but the general idea is if you become a closed-minded person refusing to listen to other information, then you're also stifling growth. Even if once you know about the absolute fact of something, it's still okay to listen to information about it. It serves you to strengthen also the fact that you know what you're talking about. And you might also be able then to help the person giving that information by giving them some of your information. So it's always good to keep an open mind throughout your life about everything. Besides, we just don't know everything, do we? You might want to look at this as kind of a daily thing. After listening to the tape, you might want to make some notes, write them down, and take an idea or two and work on it every day, say, you know, for a little while. I'd say you should set aside like a certain amount of time each day and kind of study these things in slow order and to observe and understand the material pretty good, because there's going to be a lot of time of reflection. Later on, I'm going to talk about how you can instigate thoughts, send them out into the universe, have them come back into you, and you can study the reaction. And the idea will be is you're going to learn how the psyche develops in you. You're going to learn how the spirit actually gains in wisdom. And you're going to be able to watch and kind of monitor that process. In other words, you're going to be suddenly in control of your personal growth and also in charge of kind of patching up and maintenance on who you already are. because we all like to think that we can improve ourselves a little bit. And we're going to learn later on about how we can look into who we are, into our past, and see how we've come to be who we are, and how we can actually make some changes in that a little bit. So that's going to take a lot of reflection, so don't plan on hurrying through the use of this information. You can listen to the tape all the way through, I'm sure most of you will, but then I would suggest again you go back through it and write down some ideas and then practice it on your own. When you do that, when you find yourself wanting to contemplate some of these ideas, time and tranquility are going to be necessary for you to study this. So you want to find like a quiet place or a quiet time of day, just like in meditation, okay? Because you're going to be doing a lot of meditation actually on these new objects, these new ideas and so forth, and so you can feel your spirit grow. Good morning's always a good time because the mind's pretty fresh when you get up. If not, then usually in the evening between 8 and 10 possibly. You might even want to get into the habit of talking out loud. I do that a lot because I'm always recording tapes like this at home and so forth, and I find it very useful just to talk out loud. I mean, I gain a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience. It's very helpful to me always, even to me making tapes like this. I've done a lot of talking in classes and lectures, and I can assure you that I'm learning just as much as the people out in the audience are, because to say things out loud is to cause, is to put thoughts and ideas into action, to speak them, to express them. And when you put them into action and so forth, it's an experience. And as we experience things, we learn from it. So it's always good to write things down. It's good to say things out loud. It's great for your own personal growth. Okay, you might also want to remember also that some of the things in here, some of the ideas and concepts about mentality and so forth are going to be kind of new. So go kind of slow and don't try to bite off the whole thing all at once. Because, you know, if you take this in small steps and think on each of these ideas slowly, then you'll find that you can grow very well in small steps. It's always better to start little things in action that cause the big things to happen. That's always the best way of learning. I think I made reference once before, even when you go to school, when you're a freshman in college, you don't go get a senior book on your subject, dash it open, and look at the ending. You know, in order to graduate, you work your way through all 4 years of studies in order to work your way up to the information that's presented towards the end of your studies. So that's the general process when you learn anything. I know it's always exciting to look at the end and see where you might wind up, but to actually learn something, it is also necessary that you yourself work your way through every little step and earn it, make it part of yourself all along the way. So maybe if you can, you might want to start setting aside a half an hour a day to do your meditation and start working on yourself and try to get a normal schedule. Discipline is a key factor in anything in life. And if you set aside every day, say 20 minutes before you go to work or half an hour before you go to bed and look at it like something that must be done, like an appointment, then you'll find, you know, not only will you gain very well at that, but you'll find that there's a lot of fun in having discipline. You know, it makes your life more orderly, more logically. You're going to wind up having to instruct yourself and practice things on your own quite a bit. As I explain some of these ideas to you, you're going to have to figure them out, and you're going to have to literally sit down and kind of meditate yourself on what they mean to you. Some of them will, some of the things I'm going to talk about will seem very normal to you. You'll agree with them. Other things you're going to say, well, that's probably right, but let me think about that. Other things you may not agree with at all, and that's okay too. I'm not here to tell you everything that I'm saying is exactly right. I personally agree with it and think it forms a very logical way of growing and understanding yourself. But the whole picture isn't in yet, and we're all different. So you be careful as you go through this. But in the end, the point is I'm going to have to make, you're going to have to learn it yourself. Just hearing information doesn't mean that you learned it. How often have you read a book with great information in it, and you agreed with it, you thought, gee, that was great stuff. You know, and you remember parts of it, and you put the book on the shelf. And then you read another book or you go on about your daily life and you remember some things about it. But if you do not incorporate those things into your life, they don't become part of you. They're just in your memories. They're just information that's good at parties or whatever. So you didn't make any change in your life because of the things that you learned. You can do the same thing with this information, but at some point you may want to actually change your life, and you can look to this information as the methods and the ways that you can go about doing that. And then you're going to want to come back and go step by step, where you have to learn it yourself and make it become part of yourself. Okay, repetition is a good idea. It's a good idea when you are learning anything. Repetition, you know, it means multiple experiences. So as you practice your meditative exercises, as you practice your meditative immersion, as you practice forming your spirit, as you practice moving in time, as you practice, you're also going to do something called examination of waking state dreams, which we'll talk about a little bit later. As you do all of these things, and as you develop your memory, your concentration, and so forth, they're all going to take practice, and you have to do them over and over again. And a good way to do it is to explain to yourself how you're going to go about doing it. And you might want to even say out loud when you're working on each concept or idea. You want to talk to yourself like you're explaining it to somebody else, exactly what you're going to do and how you're going to go through the steps of what you're working on at any particular time. This creates intellectual knowledge and awareness. Now, like I mentioned earlier, reading a book is one thing. It's some ideas go into memory. They're registered in your subconscious, and we hold them there, you know, for future conversations. But when you actually do something, put experience and life into it, you intellectualize it. It becomes part of yourself. It adds to your intellect. Okay? It's one thing just to be able to recite a profound statement and to tell someone, for instance, that, oh yes, Einstein, E equals mc square, that means energy equals mass times the speed of light square. Well, you sound very intelligent, but you're not intelligent. All you do is memorize a phrase out of a book. When you can explain what all of that means in detail, and having had experience of grinding your way through the formula, performing experiments of your own and understanding it, then you have gained an intelligence. You now have experience. And that's the way life is. We need to gain experience through the use of things, and then it becomes part of us. And that's what spiritual growth is all about. The next thing I want to touch on just a little bit is memory. And I've often been accused, you might say, of having a good memory, and I do have a good memory. I have my own methods, I would say, or techniques of remembering things. You're listening to all of these tapes, and probably, I would say, 80% of everything on these tapes, I can recite at any given time. The things that I have trouble with, of course, are remembering an exact date or time that Billy had a contact, which number of contact it would be. But you could quiz me on these tapes, and I'm sure I could score in the 90 percentile somewhere remembering everything that I've said, because I put everything in story association form. When I read information, I associate it. I see it in my mind being played out like an actual live experience, where I relate one concept to another. I always relate things. So I find ways of relating one piece of information to something that I already know. I don't know why I do that. It just always seemed to work for me, and I remember things well. I've never taken a memory course, but I'm sure if I did, I would probably find that the techniques that I use for association of ideas and building on known things are probably ways that memory technicians use anyway. Well, what I wanted to bring up about memory was the fact that quite often I run into people that you're going to have to remember a lot of things here. So besides, memory is a sign of a clear, strong, powerful mind. That's what I wanted to bring up. Many people who think they do not have a good memory are just plain wrong. You see, memory is a natural function of, you know, the mind itself. Everybody is capable of remembering infinite amounts of information. Okay. The problem is that we block that quite often. You know, you hear people complaining about a failing or a poor memory, or they say, oh gee, I just can't remember anything anymore. My memory is getting so bad. Well, that's not true. I mean, it may be true their memory's failing, but the memory itself inside still is there, and it is still capable of functioning at any time, at any age, unless there happens to be some sort of breakdown of tissue matter from disease or something. But a memory isn't necessarily bad or good, even though people claim that it is. You see, there is always the capability of a fully functional and correctly working memory. Memory disorder is caused by a number of things. One, lack of interest. People just don't make any attempt to even learn how to remember things. You know, you remember things because you want to. You make a concerted effort to say to yourself, I want to remember this. And when you do that, quick little pieces of machinery go into gear in there, make some quick associations, and you make an effort to concentrate on something for a moment and remember exactly what it is. I still remember my phone number, you know, years ago of most all of my jobs. You know, I worked as an agent back in the 60s in the musical business, and I remember my phone number even in Chicago at the time there. So, and I remember my address and phone numbers when I was a child, because those were important things, so people could find me or I could find my parents or whatever. So, and I associate things well, so that's how you remember them. Most people don't remember. The number one cause is they don't make any effort to. They have no interest in remembering. So their memory just keeps, you know, they don't use it, so then they complain about it. Another common problem is overload of personal troubles and problems. You know, if a person is suffering from nervous tension, strain on the job, whatever, these things preoccupy our thoughts. They frankly get in the way. They're just kind of like filters or whatever in our brain, and then you can't remember anything because you're so preoccupied with stress, problems, doubt, things like that. Fixed ideas and mentally disturbing thoughts get in the way. If you are a person given to following perhaps strange ideas and organizations and so forth that preoccupy you with too many fantasies and so forth, that will certainly get in the way. You know, it's not healthy to preoccupy ourselves with illogical thinking and fantasies. It's particularly dangerous, like the movies and so forth we have with all the violence and so forth. It creates fear in people inside. Even though we might have a dramatic hero on the screen that the ending, you know, beats the bad guys, you've just witnessed 90 minutes of a very immoral, violent way of dealing with things in life. That has an effect on people also. That can cause fears and so forth inside of you that can actually affect your memory also. People program themselves also that they have a bad memory. One of the first steps now to learn is the power of your subconscious inside of yourself. Okay? Your subconscious is programmable just like a computer is. Our brains are not so much different than a computer. And oddly enough, that's because scientists designed the computer around the way the brain works. They already learned that in the brain there are all these connectors that go off on all the time. And they designed a computer around the same thing. For those of you not familiar with a computer, the whole thing is built on a 1 and a 0. It's called binary code. 1 is on and 0 is off. And there are little switches inside, literally. They just go off on, off on, off on. And a certain arrangement of switches means the letter A. Some other arrangement of switches, on, on, off, off, on, whatever it is, means B, C, etc. And from there, they've built up processors that imitate what the brain is doing in very simple format. Okay? So your subconscious inside of yourself can be programmed. Actually, it's being programmed all the time. It's just if you're not taking any care about it, it's going to get programming just kind of randomly on its own, however life deals it out. But your subconscious is open for business all the time. And as this pertains to memory, you can say to yourself, "Oh, I have a bad memory. I just can't remember anything." And you say that kind of offhandedly to people as an excuse when you can't remember something. Well, what you do every time you do that, you reinforce your subconscious that you really do have a bad memory. It becomes convinced that you have a bad memory. It also picks up your feelings why you really have a bad memory. Your lack of interest, your problems, your troubles, perhaps embarrassment or whatever. You know, if you feel like you're not an intelligent person, you don't want to venture a guess at an answer, so you just hide, you don't even want to give one. Whatever the reasons may be, your subconscious really knows. You can't fool your subconscious. It is you. So, if you program your brain, your subconscious, into believing that you have a bad memory, you reinforce that. Also, your material subconscious mind that's in there feeds information all the time, or attempts at least, to your spiritual subconscious, your spiritual self. Your spiritual self will accept things that are based on wisdom, that are not illogical, that become part of you. And if you have become a person that continually builds up an energy in your subconscious of not being able to do things like having a poor memory, your subconscious and your spirit side picks up on that also. And you affect your spiritual growth. You start to form blocks in your spiritual side, not allowing it to grow also. So power of spirit can also be little blocks in there too. So we have to kind of be careful in there, you know, because if we give our subconscious an order, like, "I have a bad memory," it'll believe you. And it knows you do have a bad memory because you're not able to remember things because you're blocking it, you're not trying it, or whatever the problem may be. So your subconscious does take things literally. If a person can clear up their disturbing thoughts, their memory will return. As opposed to saying to yourself, "I have a lousy memory and I just can't remember a phone number or anything," or, "Gee, I'm sorry I forgot your birthday," or whatever. This person can actually learn to turn that around. And this is one thing you can begin working on right away, because we can all make improvements on our memory. And simple ways to do it is through concentration. You can learn to have a strong memory. You can start programming yourself that "I have a beautiful memory. It's wonderful. I can remember everything." And you can concentrate on that. And as you do, As you start putting energy into the idea that you now have a good memory, your memory will start improving. And as you start finding out the things that, you know, keep you from having a good memory, many of which I've mentioned already, and some of them may hit home with some of you people, when you find out those things and admit it and start getting them out of the way, the memory gets even better. And then you'll find out, gee, it actually works. My memory does improve. I can start associating things and I can remember things and it gets better, and it's not only useful, it just makes you feel better about yourself. Then you'll suddenly decide and find out very quickly that you can program your subconscious. And that's a very good thing to understand. If you're not aware that you can, you need to know that, because that can be a major, major stumbling block and reason why people are not successful in life. They do not create a future for themselves because they have no knowledge or faith in the fact that they can program tomorrow. They can program your subconscious to go out there and be very powerful and perform for you. Well, let me give you two or three ideas on how you can begin to develop concentration. Of course, one idea would be, as we discussed on the meditation tape, the meditation exercise itself for concentrating on your own respiration or breath. We talked about that. If you didn't listen to that tape, that's a very good one to listen to before you listen to this one, because there's a lot of logical ideas and theory on there that are going to help you with the stuff we're doing here, because you're going to do more and more meditating all the time. I'm not talking about the type of meditating where you're just going to sit on a hilltop and gaze at the sun off whatever into nothingness. We're going to do practical things that actually change your life and change the way that you think. To develop a better memory, to develop power of spirit, to develop clear logical thinking, to develop a better self, to develop any kind of maintenance of the different parts of your mind and spirit, you must learn to concentrate. Concentrate and focusing is the very basic building block of starting to make yourself a better person. You have no hope of any kind of mind maintenance or growth without the ability to concentrate and focus on things, because without it, it is impossible to meditate. Meditation is a natural outgrowth of concentration. So let me give you two or three ideas and techniques you can do. If you're not one to use a lotus position or whatever, you can also use a candle. This is a simple one that probably most people have tried at one time or another in their life. All that's necessary to do is set yourself down in a nice comfortable chair and get a little candle, one that's going to burn at least for 5 or 10 minutes anyway. And put it about 1 yard away from you. A yard is 3 feet. So to many of us, that's just a little bit beyond an arm's length. Once you do that, find yourself sitting in the chair very comfortably and focus on the rim of the candle for about 5 minutes. I'm talking about the top edge of the candle just below the flame, right in there. Some people like to look right into the flame. Personally, I kind of look right at the bottom of it. And do that. Set a little clock next to you somewhere so you know how long you're doing this. And do it for 5 minutes. Thinking constantly of the word sun, S-U-N, okay? So stare at the candle, concentrate on the word sun, block out any other thoughts that come in. If you have to visualize the sun itself, whatever you need to do, focus right on there, keeping your vision right at it, and it does start working. Your concentration builds up. Here's the process. For the first day, the first time you do it, just do it for 5 minutes. And then add 1 minute a day until you can get up to 12 minutes. So the second day would be 6 minutes, 7 minutes, etc. You'd build up to doing this for 12 minutes. Okay? Keeping out all extraneous thoughts and other things and concentrating just on that candle and thinking of the word sun. Okay? Continue then for 6 days at this particular level right here when you can do this for 12 minutes. Once you can do that, increase the span up to 15 minutes. And think of a rose. Visualize a rose in your mind as you're staring right into the flame and the rim on that candle for 6 days. Okay? Once you've gotten to this point, I want to change the exercise just slightly now. You're going to continue this exercise for 15 minutes a day, but you're going to allow yourself to concentrate on a positive thought about your memory. And you can just pick it, because you're going to pick the phrase you're going to say, like, my memory is fully functional, my memory is perfect, I can remember anything. Whatever the phrase or thought or idea that you want to form, and use the same one every day. By concentrating on the same thought over and over, you put power into it. You put strength and conviction into it. Your subconscious picks it up. Your spirit then attaches to it. Because as you concentrate on things, your material subconscious mind sends them to your spiritual self. And as your spirit picks up on it, you're growing spiritually. This is spiritual growth. And your power of your spirit increases, and that's what we're after. So do that. Practice that one. You could also do the same thing with like a glass sphere, like a crystal ball. Some people have crystal balls around their house. You can do the same thing with that. The difference is, of course, the crystal ball doesn't have a light inside of it. So you'll need to cast or shine a light somehow into the crystal ball so that there's a bright spot right in the middle of the crystal ball. And then do the same thing with that. Focus on the middle of it using the same thing, 5 minutes the first day, build up to 12 minutes, and go through the same cycle. Some people have a lot of crystals around the house. If you have a crystal perhaps on a chain or something like that, or a pendulum or a precious stone, you could do the same thing. All we're really looking for here is a focus point to concentrate on, something that's pleasing, something that works well for you. You need to produce that light spot on there, you know, so it makes it so you can concentrate right on it. Here's another technique you might want to try that's a little different. You can also do this with a piece of paper with a couple of lines on it. Take a plain letter-sized piece of paper and with a nice black marker or heavy pencil of some type, draw a straight line about 10 inches long. And then right next to that, draw another parallel line, just the same 10 inches long, about an inch apart, so you got two lines. Then take the piece of paper and a thumbtack or some scotch tape or something, stick it on the wall and put it about eye level, because you're going to sit in a chair now about 12 feet away from it. Stick it on the wall, get your chair back up 12 feet, sit down at the chair and have the paper about eye level. Sit comfortably in the chair, concentrate on the lines on the paper, but this time, don't concentrate on the word sun, concentrate on the word one, as in one, two, three, because you got two lines here, right? And if you concentrate on one and think it, your subconscious picks up on it. And at some point when you concentrate, as you're staring at these two lines right in the middle, they become one line. Okay? Now you're going to experience something kind of nice as you're doing any of these exercises. What will happen is that as you continue to stare at these and focus on these little lights and so forth and concentrate, depending on the behavior of the individual and, you know, how much you do this and how much mental intensity you really put into it, at some point, a very small point of light will change into like a sun, or what Billy calls a sohar. It's like a glowing ball of light that just presents itself as you're focusing and concentrating. And as you do that, this will grow. It gets larger and larger to the point that it fills your entire vision. And as you keep focusing on the same spot, what happens is you slip right off into this beautiful meditation. That's a beautiful meditation immersion technique. It glows right into this large glow, and it dominates like your whole field of vision. You'll see it happen. It's a very natural thing. Nice part is also, when you attain this particular glow, when you get into this blissful state, this feeling, this is called meditation. That's what you're doing. As you do that, it stays with you. Even after you stop, the feeling, the blissful feeling and so forth, and the imagery that stay with you sometimes for hours or even days. So it's a very good way to bring yourself into a blissful mood. If you're just a person of stress, doubt, problems, or whatever, use this technique normally. Just grab a candle, whatever, sit down and stare at it. Let that glowing ball come about, and it feels great. Another interesting thing that will probably start happening, and I'm going to get more into it later on, is after this glowing ball comes in and you get into this blissful meditative state where all of your vision looks like a glowing sun, after you stop these exercises, every now and then after that, little kind of incoherent images and so forth may just pop up and you'll see them in your mind's eye. Don't be alarmed about that. This is the very beginning of your spiritual subconscious starting to talk to you, and we're going to talk more about it later on, but don't be alarmed by that. It's a natural way. You're not used to being in connection with your spiritual self. So as these little light images and so forth come along, which don't seem to make any sense, relax. They will make sense. Your subconscious will begin to feed your material mind information and symbolism about these images, and you'll be able to put the whole effect together. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on. So practice your concentration. Your memory will increase dramatically. Not only that, you're just going to feel an awful lot better. And this is the sort of thing that we need to practice anytime, because all forms of spiritual growth and clarity of thinking require concentration and the ability to do it at any given time. Okay? And the next thing I'm going to talk about before we go on is reflexology. Reflexology is, it involves the sole of the foot, and it's part of the lessons that we're going to talk about here. So the idea is that the concentration of your whole body goes into a nerve reflex zone in the feet, especially in the sole of the feet. I want to draw your attention to the fact, since we were talking about concentration on different things, that the body itself concentrates through all of its nerve endings. It concentrates what it's doing. A lot of its feelings go right into the nerve reflex zone in your feet. Now, this has been known for a long time, thousands of years. The ancient Chinese and other races were very aware of this. And today, the practice of massaging the feet and so forth, and understanding how the nerve endings on the bottom of the feet are in direct contact with certain areas of the body, is called reflexology. Okay? This is particularly important right on the sole of the feet, on the bottom of the feet. So quite often you will see a chart of the bottom of a foot, and it will have little lines and so forth, like a chart showing you all the different areas on the foot and which area of the body that actually affects. As I'm talking on this tape, I do have one of those charts, and I'll see if I can get one, and I'll put it in the exhibit for you so you can have a copy of that also. If not, it's a good idea to get a hold of that chart, but I think I can probably find mine. I'll put it in there. See, the idea is that since all of the through the nerve zone on the bottom of the feet, on the sole of the feet, since we have the ability there to massage that and send impulses through the nerves up into the body, something pretty interesting can happen. We can clear up a lot of things in the body, causing minor ailments and so forth really to vanish away. Like I mentioned, in ancient times, the Chinese, which they still use it, and a lot of other ancient races were very aware of the value of foot massage. Many people, if they don't use their feet very much, if they sit all day long and so forth, they might suffer from a lot of minor ailments that could easily be gotten away just by some basic foot massage or walking around. Look to the many primitive tribes that we have that usually go barefoot all the time in Africa, and tribesmen and so forth, where they don't wear shoes. At the same token, they aren't subject to any of the normal civilized ailments that we have here. They hardly ever have them whatsoever. Of course, this doesn't prevent infection and things from coming into your body. But by massaging the bottom of the feet and pushing in certain areas, then you send impulses on these nerve areas through the body, and that actually affects your health. Because of that, it's a good idea to go walking barefoot for at least a half an hour every day over some wet, grassy, uneven ground. As a matter of fact, as I'm making all of these tapes, I do them barefoot because I'm moving around here in the studio, and I can move around on the floor and so forth, and I find even moving my feet and kind of, standing up on my toes every now and then, that affects me also. Try to find some area, like a grassy area, where the grass is nice and maybe some bumps in the ground so that you can walk around, and do that every day for a little while. Don't walk on concrete or asphalt. The flat hardness doesn't do that much good. I mean, it's better than walking around with shoes, but not much. So you want to find some uneven grassy ground. That works the best. If you search your thoughts, you're going to remember when you were young how much you enjoyed going barefoot. You think there might be something to the idea that the spiritual subconscious knows that, and it's trying to get you to walk around on the bottom of your feet. It's trying to, heal itself and affect itself, and we just don't pay any attention. Well, it's not only possible, I'm sure that's probably what it's doing. If you use foot massage, you may notice some pain in certain spots. If you go to someone who understands reflexology and they want to give you a good foot massage to work out some things, they can, by touching certain areas on your foot, when they find pain, they can find these are the areas that are clogged up and so forth. And they will massage that area and work it out. Now, you're liable to be going, ouch, ooh, 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 that hurts. But, of course, they're not going to stop because you just paid them $25 to, clear up something in you. So you're going to get your money's worth. And they shouldn't stop because these are the areas of congestion. These are the areas where your body is blocked up and is suffering from some minor ailment. And they're actually sending impulses through your body then, which are going to help. It's going to be very beneficial to you for them doing that. So put up with the pain a little bit. And through just daily doing that, the pain will slowly dissipate, and you'll find about the same time, the little ailment, whatever is bothering you,
will also go away. If you want to use a little natural massage oil or something, that can be pretty beneficial too. If it's not convenient to go outside and walk around outdoors, you can walk barefoot around the house, but that's usually on flat ground, and so your feet don't get the individual massage action on different areas of your feet. You can use a walking machine. There are quite a few of those in existence now. You see a lot of people with them in their home, and that's better than nothing. But ideally, if you can get to it, go outside, go barefoot, at least walk around in your socks or something, and walk on grassy, bumpy ground if possible. Heavy shoes with very thick soles are not useful at all for this. If someone tries to sell you a pair of big platform sandals or something saying it's great for your feet, it's not. It really has no help at all. The smoothness adds nothing. What you really want are thin sole shoes so that your feet can feel the ground. The heavy sandals might give you some support in certain areas. There could be some logic to that. But if you wish to perform reflexology on your body and stimulate through the nerve endings on your feet, you need very thin shoes, like Italian loafers or moccasins or something, where your feet can actually feel the ground as you're walking along. All right, let me move on to a little different subject now. We've got you concentrating and staring at candles and rubbing your feet and so forth, and I'm sure by now you're already feeling a little bit different. Let me talk a little bit about how powerful a thought can be. You know, earlier on one of the tapes we talked about that the creation itself is an idea, and that the creation itself created the universe strictly out of the embodiment of its idea. It had an idea to create one, and it did. Consequently, the universe is all coarse matter and fine matter. Coarse matter being solid, fine matter being the etheric, non-solid matter. So a thought actually can be concentrated, concentrated, and concentrated on to the point eventually it can become solid matter. Now, I kind of doubt if any of us are going to be able to do that. Even no matter how hard we think, we probably cannot cause something to materialize. We're just not that developed. People on other worlds perhaps that are far more developed than us who understand that, and they also understand then the workings of the laws of nature, probably can do that at some level of development in their life. But, you know, for the most part, Earth people can't do that yet. Maybe if we got everybody at Earth concentrating on the same thought, we might be able to really do something miraculous. But at this point, no. But we can put power into thoughts. Any person who concentrates on an idea for a period of time will see that the idea will come to pass. It's very simple. If you think about any idea, just something that you want to do, be getting a haircut or having your nails done or buy some clothes or whatever, just some simple idea, any action always starts with a thought, doesn't it? Quite often you'll find yourself during the week thinking of something you want to do on the weekend, and you think about it again, and then you explain it to somebody else. You're starting to put power into that idea, aren't you? And the more you think about it and concentrate upon it, each time you think about it, you reinforce it a little bit stronger with some new parameter. If it's going to be buying a new pair of shoes on the weekend, by Tuesday when you think of it, it's just a good idea. I'd like some new shoes. Wednesday you start thinking about the shop, maybe where you're going to get them. Thursday you're thinking about what they're going to look like, how much you're going to spend. You check your checkbook to see if you got the money. Friday you call a friend and make plans to meet them at the mall at noon. You know, the plan is in action. And the action hasn't happened yet, but all week long you've been putting power into this thought. Now we do this all the time, all day long, but most of us take these kind of actions totally for granted. And we don't realize how much power there is actually in our thinking. As a matter of fact, it is. You have to be very careful what you do think, because in most cases, it will happen. There is great power in how you think. This, to make a little side note here, in Billy's book, he's always making references to how people are led astray by what he calls religious heresies and wrong thinking and so forth. Well, to some extent, he's probably right. I'd like to point out something here that he's talking about in reference to religions and power of thought. He's commenting on the idea that people create the concept of God. We're not born with that idea in mind. When you get a certain age, you're taken to a church and you're taught the stories of Christianity and you're taught that there is a God who created you. And as soon as you find out that, gee, somebody made me or created me, then right away, you know, you feel like you should have a little respect for this, whatever it is. We never see a God. No one's really sure there is one. But we manage to manifest the reality of one by continuing to concentrate on the idea. people who are into believing into God, and I'm not against that. You believe whatever you need to believe for yourself. If you're into that, you manifest that eventually where you begin to believe that it's very real. If you think about it hard enough and reinforce it with study, with lifestyle and other things, then it becomes very real to you. It's just as real as those shoes that you bought over the weekend. If you believe an action is possible, it becomes very real. And quite often, and the point Billy was making is quite often so-called religious miracles, that's exactly what they are. When people think that they have seen an angel or the Mother Mary or Jesus or something in the sky, quite often, that's exactly what that is. They have put so much force into the thought of creating these things that they believe it's actually real. Someone else would not see it at all, and they think that you're probably off your nut or whatever. But a miracle is a term for something that enlightened people cannot explain. There are no miracles because everything can actually be explained through the laws of the Spirit, the logic of the Spirit. There are spiritual and creational explanations for all of these things, but these people are not aware of it. So, unfortunately, this happens to an awful lot of people. And Billy makes reference to that several times, how many of the so-called miracles throughout life are nothing more than simple things that can be explained spiritually, but because of the ignorant thinking of people, as he puts it, they just don't know any better, so they think it's a miracle, and that even reinforces these thought even stronger to them that it really happened, it's real. So now they're more and more convinced it's real, and they're led farther and farther astray from the real truth about what life really is. Your actions and decisions are only in small part caused by your material conscious mind. Now, to define this term, if you're not used to hearing it, the conscious mind is your conscious mind is your upfront thinking processes that you use all the time to gather information. All of your senses, sight, feel, touch, smell, hearing, taste, and so forth, are connected to your conscious mind. It's your conscious mind that, you know, does the speaking and talking and listening and hearing. It gathers data and it expresses data. But behind the scenes, if you'll have your drawing there of our little material and spiritual head, you'll see that we also have a subconscious that contains all of our memories and inner workings. It's the computer of our conscious mind. And then we also have a psyche, which is our storehouse. It's our feelings and how we think about things. It's our persona. That's in there. That's very important because the psyche is actually kind of who we are. That is the collection of how, all of your attitudes towards everything. And that becomes your persona, so to speak. And then there's the spiritual side also. So when I refer to the material conscious, I'm talking about the material side of yourself and the conscious part of your mind. Your subconscious mind, though, actually, again, is the real force. It contains all of the secrets, the great mysteries all about yourself. It contains all those interesting little things about you when you were young, growing up, all of those experiences, all those buried memories or so forth are down there in your subconscious mind. Your mind, it really has a marvelous memory. It's just that we choose not to find things, go looking for things, and we don't put any interest in trying to remember most things. We just let them fly right by us, but they're in there. You see, the life destiny of each person is right in there, tucked away in those memories. The subconscious is where you can take control of your life, however, though. You can override all of your upbringing and environment. There's lots of talk about, you know, we are, where we've grown up, and there's certainly some truth to that. If you grow up in a very rich neighborhood, the proverbial silver spoon in your mouth, if everything goes your way, you have your own sailboat when you're 10, your own Ferrari by the time you're 16. I'm sure I'm talking to a lot of you that have that. If you're in that particular position, then you've grown up, you know, with a lot of things in common, taken for granted, I mean. And you led a pretty posh life as far as material world. And that certainly affects who you are, as opposed to a poor fellow who may grow up in Africa, never know who his parents are, starving to death, full of illness and so forth. He lives in a totally indifferent environment. And of course, we, all over the world, there are varying degrees of environments and so forth, and types of upbringing, types of belief structures, type of knowledge about things that are pushed onto us. So, we of course, those are major factors in our life. But you can override all of these. The personal power of thought and the personal attitude of your life step into action. You can do that. Vast power can be created and called upon when the individual really becomes aware of the potential of his subconscious. Instead of dealing with everything with your conscious mind and not taking any control over your subconscious mind and programming it, then you are just exactly how the world dictates to you. If you make no effort to change or control yourself, you are going to be just the way the world dictates, just the way your environment dictates. How often have we portrayed the story in books and films where the rich guy's got his nose up in the air and has no contact with the middle class guy, and the great moral of the story is that he learns a great lesson of humility somewhere and becomes one of the guys at the end and starts acting like a regular guy? Well, that's a typical idea that happens to all of us in some way or another. We are all a collection of all of our environments and experiences in those environments as we grow up, right? Well, if we don't make any effort to change that, there's no change in ourself. We just continue rambling on being who the world around us dictates who we will be. Cause and effect. We react with our material mind, respond to it, and we don't make any effort to make any changes. But if we do, if through meditation, acquirement of new knowledge through clear observation, we start recreating our viewpoints on things, if we start providing new knowledge about the world through clear observation, maybe read a book or listen to a tape or something and get some new ideas, we actually do change not only our old thoughts, but we start acquiring all these new thoughts and we become a new person. There actually can be major personality changes. Definitely an improvement in character, integrity, and things along these lines. So we certainly have control over our subconscious, and we can certainly program it. That's what we're doing right now as you're listening to this tape. You're starting to add on to your level of knowledge and information. And as you learn to concentrate and practice your exercises and so forth, it starts happening. Your abilities of concentration turn into wonderful moments of meditation. Through the meditation, there are great realizations of self. You become face-to-face with yourself, developing more integrity about who you really are, and you start making changes and adding new things to your character and life. Then you get a firm grip on it. That's when you become a powerful person. Once the individual understands that he can influence and control all this source of decisions and actions, this subconscious, then he wishes he can control it with intentional thinking. So, and then you say to yourself, well, how do I do this? You know, this all is talk's cheap. Randy, how do I actually go about this to actually control my mind? Well, we're going to clearly explain that again as we go, but it's, for the most part, we're talking about a slow process of learning to concentrate, to develop a meditation immersion. These things have been explained. After you learn to meditate, we're going to learn more about ourselves through waking dreams and asking questions and so forth. So we're developing the tools and the knowledge that we need. And we have to start viewing the world through that keen, clear, pure observation, because we're going to start reprogramming how we think about things. And we're going to get rid of all the value judgments and the smearing and so forth that goes on in our society. And we're going to start seeing things clearly for exactly the way they are. The way you think, the concepts that you think, the thoughts that you have, the wishes, the fantasies when you go to the movies, the books you read and so forth, all this goes into your subconscious mind and forms your view of life. This is who you are. It also begins to create your destiny. Your destiny is just your future. It's tomorrow, it's next week, it's next year, it's the end of your life, it's where you're going. Even beyond the physical life, you're always forming it all the time, because there's a certain amount of programming you can do in the material world that goes on into the spiritual world, and even once again will return when you create a new material body. Part of that is your sex gender. You have control over that. You can change from male to female, from lifetime to lifetime, and this is one area where the individual actually has some say-so. Subconsciously, your mind's doing it all the time. Your conscious mind may not be aware of it. If you end your life up firmly male and are enjoying it and want to learn more that the male experience can be provided for in life, you will come back as a male. You're thinking that way. Subconsciously, your mind programs itself for its next gender. If you wish to have a say-so in that for whatever reason, that's an area that is entirely possible. So that's what I mean a little bit about controlling your future. Okay, here's how we form the essence of our life here in the subconscious mind. Here's where we create the future, we control our thoughts, or control our thinking. And remember, whatever you start thinking about sooner or later, is going to be, that thought's going to go into action. What you think are just unborn deeds. These are happening on the concept of development. Okay? As you think, you develop ideas, and they actually do happen. And remember, the more a person entertains a thought, the stronger it will gush forward and become a material thing, or a material action, or deed. Just like going out to buy those shoes this weekend. You know, if you spend every day putting a little energy into it, there is no doubt, on Saturday, you're going to go to the shoe store and buy those new shoes, right? I mean, we kid women about, you know, their urge to go shopping, but let's hand it to them. I mean, when they decide to go shopping, they put energy into it, right? They talk about it, and they get excited about it, and they go, and they spend. You know, there's definite action there. Guys are kind of mealy about shopping, you know. I mean, I go shopping whenever my girlfriend pushes me into it, and I don't like to go to malls too much, but when I do, I slowly kind of get into the mood, but I very seldom go out and just buy things for myself, unless it's electronic toys for my computer, so I like to do that. But for the most part, you know, we got to hand it to women because they've taken control of shopping and they are supporting the malls of America. Okay. Well, let me get back on track here where we're going with the subconscious. You know, quite often we think if you say something with your material mind, you think that you had complete freedom at that. You think you did that all by yourself. If you make some statement at a party, for instance, they're talking about, say, pick a subject, reincarnation's popular these days, and you suddenly burst out with, well, I think reincarnation is possible, and I think I probably was a butterfly at one time. And maybe you're even surprised that you said that, but you felt perfectly free in saying that. No one twisted your arm, and you probably, you may have said it for a variety of reasons, to be cute, to impress the girl sitting next to you, whatever, or maybe it was just a firm commitment, or recently you'd read a book on philosophy from the East, and you decided that was a cool thing to say, to kind of like as an opener to let people know that, I know something about reincarnation, and so you made a statement. But at any rate, you thought you were totally in control of that statement, didn't you? Well, surprise, you actually weren't. My point here is that every time we get ready to say something or do something, it is not totally just our material consciousness that's in charge of that. It is your subconscious mind which plays a very big part in what we say and do all the time. And as we program our subconscious mind with all of our wishes and fantasies and dreams and so forth, we build all this into our subconscious mind. It's always there, and it's always there to use the character of ourself, who we are. Who you are is a collection of all of those experiences, ideas, and memories that's in your subconscious mind that we don't take the time to apply any maintenance to and do any programming to. There's an automatic mechanism in the subconscious mind all the time, and it doesn't consult your material self, your mouth, when you say things. It's just there always providing the information, just like I'm doing here on this tape. You know, my material mind is talking, I'm saying these things, but all of this information is in my subconscious, and all of my ideas about how I feel about it are in my subconscious. Do I really believe this, or do I think it's a bunch of hooey, or whatever it is? My character is my subconscious, and that dictates the attitude by how I explain it to you. So when you say something every now and then, stop and just pause for a second and remind yourself that, or think about, why did I say that? I could have said that six different ways. You're aware that when you make a statement, depending on your attitude, it'll control how it comes out. You know, you can say something very nice to somebody like, here's some flowers, happy birthday. Well, depending on your attitude, whether or not you really care about this person, it could come out like, here's your birthday, here's some flowers. You know, you could pass it off, and obviously you really don't give a hill of beans about it. Or it could be really important to you, and you spend, oh, here's these flowers, I got them and I grew them, and these are my special flowers, and you go on and on because it was very important to you to give these flowers to someone. Now, all of that, your attitude about how you say something comes from your subconscious in there. That's the gear work in there. That's the character. That's the engine which, you know, determines who you are and how you project yourself out to the world. Okay? So it's important as we learn that the subconscious mind is actually in control of an awful lot of what we do, then pretty soon we're going to decide that I think I want more of a say-so in what the subconscious is doing in there. If I am my subconscious, if the projection of my character, if how people perceive me is really determined by who I am subconsciously, I think I better start performing a little maintenance on the subconscious. Maybe it's a good idea for me to have a talk with my subconscious. Well, how would I do that? It's very simple. Your subconscious mind doesn't have a voice, but your subconscious mind listens to everything. It's you. That's what you're doing. It's all the time feeding information in the form of information, data, knowledge, and so forth to your mouth to say things. It's providing the background of all that you know to form your sentences. So at some point, I hope you become intrigued and start controlling the subconscious mind, and that will dictate how you say, how you react, how you live, and how you feel. Another important point on this subject here is not only when you speak is your subconscious there, but maybe you're trying to solve an immediate problem, and you want to maybe just solve some problem in a relationship. Maybe it's about, maybe it's about going to visit the in-laws or something like that. Even though it's an immediate problem, your material mind just liable to say yes, no, whatever, something like that. But how you deal with the problem now is going to come from the source of your subconscious. Okay? How you solve that problem, you're probably not aware of. When I use the word solve, how you solve the problem of dealing, say, for instance, with your wife to go visit the in-laws, that comes out of your subconscious mind. And that reflects on a lot of deep things about how you feel about in-laws, how you feel about the wife, and any number of things. The point is that it's not your conscious mind, it's not your mouth and your eyes and your hands and so forth, which on their own solve these problems. These problems are solved by your intelligence and your subconscious and the attitude which is formed in your subconscious on how you respond to these things. So it's our attitudes and approach to life which controls how we react and solve these things. It's these attitudes, these philosophies, approaches to life, all meaning the same thing, that really decide whether a person starts a particular action deed with certainty or uncertainty. We talked earlier about being able to take a pause before you actually, do something. If you find yourself in a position where something comes up, you got to make a decision, pause just for a second and stop and listen to the little voice from your subconscious before you do that and do things then for the right reason. You'll find that more often than not, then you'll start answering the way you really want to. You'll start speaking with more certainty, more self-reliance, and you'll be speaking with an attitude and a view of life the way you really want to present yourself, instead in some embarrassed form that you've, knee-jerk response, that you've responded very silly or said the wrong thing or whatever. How many times have we said the wrong thing and done, wish I hadn't said that, or wish I'd said it a little differently to have a different impact? You didn't pause. You reacted super fast based on some sort of superficial thing, and you wish you had done it differently, and that's where the pause comes into effect. To stop just for a second, develop the habit of doing that, and then it becomes commonplace, where it'll be all the time. This increases stability of character. When you do that on a regular basis, then I think that's what they call maturity. When you start being more stable, and I may never be mature by those grounds because I still hang on too much to my childlike, playful, creative sort of mind. I enjoy it too much. So for me, the pause is important. When I'm making tapes or speaking or whatever I'm doing, the pause is something I learned a long time ago. It allows me to speak for 2 hours, 4 hours, 8 hours, 24 hours at the same level, the same tone, the same amount of excitement or whatever, because I have a little control. It's a pacing instrument. And if the little pauses that I interject just milliseconds in between sentences and voices allows me to think about where I'm going, what I want to say, and do some quick reconnaissance on my attitude as I'm projecting things. So the pause is very, very important. Another area that merits a little bit of attention are habits. And these tendencies we have to do things over and over the same way. We develop habits of how we respond to things. If you're in conversation and you always respond maybe with a little laugh, maybe you know someone that does that. Not picking on those people, it's just what I happen to think of at the moment. It's a common habit in conversation where people kind of giggle when they speak. They're hoping you're going to like them when they say something, I guess, or they're insecure about it or whatever. Well, these habits, tendencies, and predetermined acts that we do, these are the development of corresponding thoughts in our subconscious. And over a period of time, they finally get such a hold on us and a hold on that person that it changes your whole character and it leaves kind of permanent imprint. Well, not permanent, but it makes a forcible imprint on your subconscious. And you start doing everything that way. If a person has a habit all the time, perhaps, of presenting information and acting rather silly or laughing or whatever, then the cause of that can actually, you can get to that cause. All these little insignificant thoughts, dreams, and fantasies, they're nourished daily and they're reinforced until they become like demons inside of us and kind of rule our actions. And if you think it's humorous always to say something like Elmer Fudd or make funny things, people talk funny and they do it all the time, you know. If we take that too far, we begin to look at someone like that like they're possessed almost with this concept, like they can't talk any other way, and it becomes almost an irritation. Well, you can get rid of those things. We can destroy these little build-up ideas in ourselves. We can take away the strength from them, actually, altogether. And you can do this by taking away the idea which caused them originally. You want to rethink a thought and kind of relive it and take it away. Take the strength out of it altogether. Thoughts form our lives. If we think a rich, happy life, we can have one. If we persist in negative and destructive thinking, it's also going to take over our lives and control our future, either way that we want to go. Ancient wisdom says that the master of destiny is man himself. So true. Okay? As you can see here, the overall scheme of what I'm trying to talk about is taking control of your thoughts and learning to control them through well-defined exercises, implanting new thoughts into your mind, new experiences. Think of those who think with strong concentration. They form their life and they obtain great happiness, don't they? When you see successful people, they're generally well-balanced. They're people that kind of go straight ahead. They seem very lucky. They usually kind of glow and they're happy and they're forceful. They have a certain concentration to them. They're always focused on where they're going and what they want to accomplish. Other people, on the other hand, seem to think just the opposite. We have a lot of people who continually are thinking kind of negatively towards life. They seem to always be kind of depressed and disappointed on how things are going and have a general attitude like, gee, life's just so difficult and things are hard for them. Well, that also controls their future, doesn't it? That's just the way things do go for them because that's how they're programming themselves. It's just simply not possible to form any kind of viable philosophy of life if you think negatively, depressed, if you're selfish or faint-hearted sort of person. Because what happens is you develop failures in life, and then one failure in life after another reinforces the idea that your life is a failure. Pretty soon you're convinced of it. Your subconscious becomes programmed to thinking you are a failure. And what do you know you are? Remember, we are what we think. So be careful what you think of yourself, what you think about, and what you project, because these things happen. It's also possible to create kind of a spiritual vertigo. Vertigo meaning from high places you lose your balance and you start getting dizzy and you want to fall off the side of a building or whatever. This can be caused really by this failure syndrome. If you spend too much time thinking in that way where life is always failures and you don't really see how you're ever going to get ahead, at a certain point, you know, you will kind of consume yourself with that kind of negative thinking. And it pulls you kind of into a large abyss or hole of thinking that's thought of as spiritual vertigo. A child, by the way, when a child comes into life and they're not yet aware of danger and spiritual effect overcomes danger with kind of a playful certainty sort of thing, you know, they can be in the see something dangerous could be happening. They don't know about it, so they don't react with fear. A pessimist, however, out of pure naked fear and anxiety, almost or even abruptly, loses any power of resistance and succumbs to the danger, where a child would just playfully fix it, whatever. So you can see when we come into life, we don't have all that programming yet. We haven't built up all of our fears and pessimism and disappointments and so forth. Our subconscious is not filled with all of that programming. So if we find ourselves in life like that, or we're not getting ahead, and we're not going really where we want to go, then reprogramming the subconscious is a pretty good idea, isn't it? Okay? It's the fear. If you're pessimistic and you create fear, then it's just, you know, it just keeps kind of snowballing. You're afraid things aren't going to work. They don't work because you were afraid of it. Then you convince, yep, I was right. I can't do this. And then you get, you know, you instill it even farther. So stop that. Only the man who scorns death escapes it, but the despondent one will collect it. It's another old proverb I dug up from someplace. A fearful man and a spiritual failure will never master life because fear, spiritual indifference, and inactivity over time will destroy all inner security and all will for the positive life. Your inner security, that inner feeling of self-reliance, of confidence that you get from the positive things that happen, the power that you build up, that inner security is the basic requirement for a good formation and utilization of the spirit and the life. It's like building blocks. You know, one of the first things you always want to do when you're off on something is to gain information so you're confident that you can learn it. And then you learn things in steps, just like we do in school, don't we? Again, when you're a freshman, you don't start studying the senior books. You work on the freshman things and you build up to something. We don't get ahead of ourselves. So when you're building the power of your spirit, it's the same way. We first want to develop that inner security, the feeling of confidence that comes from knowledge. Whatever a person's in love with, into that he will be transformed, it says in Billy's book. And that's very true. When an idea takes hold over a person, it then transforms your whole essence, your whole life, then, as a result of that spiritual influence. So if you find yourself actually in love with a person, an idea, whatever, you become consumed with that, don't you? And many times we can confuse love with need and other things, and then we kind of dump this, to use a word, on other people. And we can get slightly misled. This is something we need to be kind of careful with. It's through the constant schooling of the spiritual self that we rise to the highest quality of our lives. We need to constantly reinforce our spiritual self that it's doing well, that it's okay. We build up this power of thinking, of being positive, of being confident. And once we do that, we add new knowledges and new experiences to it. And we're starting to create a very self-reliant, confident person that can accomplish anything that they want. To do this, we have to be willing to burst through the bounds of our current ego and so forth, and all the environmental pressures. We have to work on being happy and work on the development of building our spirit based on logic and wisdom. This is why earlier on the meditation tape I spent so much effort talking about pure and keen observation. Seeing things exactly as they are, because that's what wisdom is, isn't it? Seeing things really the way they are, having real knowledge about something. If you want to really learn something about yourself, you have to be willing to painstakingly reflect on yourself, really see yourself as from an outside point of view almost, step outside of yourself, and really be very honest with yourself. And there's no one else listening, so you can do that. Be very honest with yourself and see exactly what your problems are, what you're reacting to, and where you want to go. And work on developing that. This is why in self-help programs, quite often, we'll see where they talk about role modeling, where you will see yourself the way you want to, maybe even paint a picture of yourself on the wall, well-dressed, successful. You know, they want you to start visualizing, you know, the way that you see yourself. And what happens is your mind just starts doing that. And they're correct. When you start putting force into that vision of yourself, you'll start acting that way. You'll start spending more time developing habits that, you know, lead you into thinking and acting that way. You'll change the way you dress, the way you talk and act. You develop a new self. The important thing is, as you do this, that you don't want to develop a new Frankenstein either. You want to make sure that you develop the correct self, the real you. Not some fantasy that someone thinks that you should be like, and not your version of Cary Grant or whoever it may be, or Marilyn Monroe or whatever. You want to develop yourself to its maximum potential. But you have control over who yourself is. So that's where the honesty and integrity comes in with yourself. When you add new things to your personality, make sure you're adding things that, you know, are correct and right for you, not someone else's idea of what they think you should be. And when you do that, bring in new information that you're going to add to yourself and be honest with it. Okay? That's where keen observation comes in. Really observe information, even the things that you're hearing from me. You know, for every 10 things I may say, one of them may be register good for you. Some of the others may be of no use. Some of them may not either make sense or might even seem incorrect to you at this time based on how you're thinking. But if there are among the things I'm saying, if there are things that inspire and stimulate you, if there's information among here that you need at the moment that's good for you on your path, that's great. Make sure you understand it clearly. Don't take my word for it. Don't take what I say for granted. Don't even assume that I'm actually right about everything. I may not be. It's important that you go out and try it for yourself. Test out ideas. See them for exactly what they are. Just because Billy believed it and I learned it and it makes sense to me, I'm speaking now from my experiences and how I view things. You want to be able to do the same for yourself. So don't ever just accept things, you know, just because someone tells you. Find your own truth. Make your own experiences. Listen and read to material and dissect it like a doctor under a microscope. Examine it carefully. Listen to every word and see what it really means to you, because it's your subconscious, it's your psyche that you're affecting when you allow information to come in. Again, this goes back to our books and movies and films and things in our environment. We affect people greatly when we put all sorts of trash on the screen and in our papers and our magazines and so forth. You can't leave pictures of violence and people being naked and sick and so forth out there for people to see without it having some effect. The well-balanced person can cope with it fairly well and just kind of shrugs it off. The uninitiated, the people who are out of balance with problems, the children who are still have these virgin minds that are absorbing things like sponges, they take it all in, and it definitely has an effect on them. And all of these things serve to form who we are, and we have to deal with this information. This is definitely why eventually in our society we're going to reach the point where we take that element of trash out of our society, where violence is and porn and so forth are no longer shown, because they do affect people. So we have to get that out of our society. Kind of an interesting paradox I just thought of that's kind of funny is that around the world there are people like Billy and other people, gurus, masters and so forth, who are what we call the thinkers of our world. These are people that are sitting around and they're contemplating existence. They're working on new ideas. They're working on their spirituality. They're trying to solve the mysteries of life. And they're delving into their spirit. They're using the spirit to try to build new self. They're providing new explanations and inspirations, like I hope that I am, to people. And quite often, though, the mainstream world out there thinks that we're a little off of it, or that we're a little nuts. Mostly that's because of numbers. There's more of them than there are of us. So they tend to look at us like we're the oddballs, when in fact it's just the other way around, isn't it? The people that are striving for truth in life, whether they're hitting the mark or not, they're trying. You know, the ones that are striving to try to make themselves better, that they're trying to improve the quality of their life. If you take this path yourself, and or if you're currently working on it, have the strength of conviction in knowing that you're right for yourself. That you're on your own path of evolution, you're discovering things for yourself, and it's important to you, irregardless of what somebody else thinks out there, especially in the American society where, you know, numbers are not necessarily right. You know, might is not right, as they say in the military at any rate. It is not necessarily so. So have the strength of conviction to go out there and be a thinker and go look for things. Too many people depend on other sources of information for their might, for their right. You know, this is what I have against, really, against cults and beliefs and formula groups and some kinds of religions and so forth, where people give up. They don't search for any new knowledge of their own. They accept the idea that some other higher source or outside source is going to take care of all their problems for them. They are not responsible for themselves. And that's where I have trouble going along with these ideas, because I'm a firm believer that we must all be responsible for ourselves and our own growth. We have to learn to take care of our own problems. If we did that, we would have fewer problems in our country, in our cities, communities, and in our own minds. So what life is all about is learning responsibility for ourselves and the world that we live in. We can't expect some other, you know, person, belief, God, or whatever it's going to be to take care of these things for us, because they don't. All too often, also, I find that people who think like that, who are expecting someone else to take care of those things for them, they just don't want to admit that they're responsible for who they are. You know, they look at their life and they're not that happy with it, whatever, and they like to blame it on somebody else. You know, like, how often have you heard someone say that, well, that's just the way that God wanted it. I guess it just didn't work out, but that's what He wanted. You know, it didn't have anything to do with their effort. Of course not. They have to blame it on somebody else. And I think that's like a problem in our society. So even though I give everybody space to grow on their own and believe whatever you want, that's my opinion on that. I think it's unfortunate when we blame our own problems on any outside influence. It's not correct. I don't believe it's the way to go. We got to start taking responsibility for ourselves. Not only is it wrong, it causes damage to your psyche. Our psyche now is the storehouse of our feelings and thinkings. I think it leads to a destructive thinking process. When we're not being responsible for ourselves, and we're thinking someone else is going to take care of our feelings and our, you know, our future and our destiny for us, that's incorrect. Also, it stymies spiritual growth. You don't contribute anything to your own spiritual growth, and you're certainly not contributing anything to the creation. So it's important that we're responsible for ourselves and we contribute and control our own growth. The biggest defeat in life, after all, is just not being happy. And you can't be happy if life is a continuous series of defeats and failures that you're blaming on some outside influence.
And I was just beginning to talk about how certain kinds of thinking leads to disease, breakdowns, closed-mindedness, and so forth like that. But there is some good news. So far I've talked about a lot of the problems you can have, because if we don't identify the problems, we don't really know how we're going to affect the solution. But there's some good news to the idea that anyone can be helped to some degree. Even if their mind is filled with all sorts of troubles, their thinking is illogical and so forth, anybody can pull it out. It just may take more work for us, some people than others. All he really needs to pull it out is a slow, systematic system of finding new knowledge, building security, and the recognition that it's truly possible. These are very important factors. Let me go over that again. First thing to do is we need to find the knowledge, get access to the knowledge, new knowledge that's going to replace the old. If we currently have a head full of stuff that's just way off track, of course, most of us get pretty closed-minded when we think we're being attacked. You know, if somebody thinks we're crazy or sick, and we hang on to stuff. But if you're really serious about growth and trying to do something with yourself, you'll seek out new knowledge. You'll listen to new ideas and find ways of replacing the old knowledge. There also has to be a certain security involved here in knowing what you're doing, that you're okay, that, you know, that things can get better, and the recognition that it's really possible to do that. The recognition that it's really possible to do that can very simply come through just the meditation, immersion exercises that we were talking about earlier. Any sort of technique that starts to associate the different parts of the brain and self to the individual. The drawing we have of the little head with the material and the spiritual on it. Well, it's necessary that you start identifying each one of those areas. We know what our conscious mind is. That's what we use all the time. You need to find your subconscious mind and learn to identify the feeling so you know where it's at. And you need to, you know that it's in there and what it does. You need to understand what your psyche is, that it is a collection of your feelings and thinking and thoughts. It's who you are, basically. It's your persona. You need to discover that you are a spiritual self also. That's harder to do. You have to start practicing exercises through meditation to that point where you can actually feel creation, that little touch of eternity that Billy was allowed to touch when he was on the Great Spacer ship that we've talked about. You need to find out, if you can develop it long enough, that on the spiritual side we have what's called the we form, the spiritual telepathy, so you can start getting in touch even with other life forms, develop your own keys, like we talked about earlier, and get into your own Akashic records, studying perhaps your past life and traumas which are making up your present self. Quite often we carry forward trauma from previous lives which we're not aware is influencing who we are today. And if you feel that there's something in there, if there's obviously something about your character or personality which is preventing you from success, it may lie in these areas. Fortunately, most of the time it's nothing more than just not having the tools, the right equipment, the right understanding of how to develop force of thought, how to start controlling our own thinking. I mean, life is really simply nothing more than just how you think. That's all it really is. So, what we need to do if someone in that particular area where they need development, they're having problems getting going, we just need to give them a push in the right direction. And that, of course, is the purpose and the reason why I make tapes on this type of information. Some of the things I say may be helpful, some of them you might not have any use for. It's like any other information. But you need to find the things in here that are relevant for you and put them to use. If there are certain things that I say, certain passages that I comment on, certain ideas that I bring up that ring a bell, that ring truth with you, wear that tape out. Go over and over it again and again. Order a new one if you need to. Make a copy. But do whatever it takes to go over and over it until it makes sense to you and it provides you the answers that you need. So that's what I mean about pushing someone in the right direction or being an inspiration. Because you have to heal yourself. You have to fix yourself. Someone else can only give you the guidelines by which to do it. We can only feed you the knowledge. I can be an inspiration, perhaps, and other people can be an inspiration to people by virtue of their own successes in life, by virtue of their own mental balance. Perhaps their clarity of thought is what you're looking for. Or maybe it's just a few pieces of information that you need to go on with your own path. So whatever it is, take it from someone else, but don't look to someone else as your mentor, your teacher, your guide, or put any responsibility on that other person for taking care of your problems. We all solve our own problems ourselves. I don't believe at all in anybody else leading us, guiding us, or taking us through life. We are here to share, but we got to define these terms properly. We share and help one another, but the responsibility is where we get into trouble. Someone else is not responsible for your life. It's not a God, an angel, a guide, or anybody else. They don't run your life for you. They are not there to do that. It is your responsibility to learn from the inspiration of these people, take the information, and develop yourself. Most importantly, the main reason is, if you don't learn it yourself, if you don't figure it out step by step and make it part of your life, it doesn't stick. It doesn't become part of yourself. You don't really change. And it doesn't become part of your spirit. There will be no spiritual growth unless you earn it and make it part of yourself. So you have to do that. You can't just take advice from someone else and figure that, okay, I got the advice. All right, I'm going to be different from now on. That's only the beginning. Any information, be it advice, a book, tape, film, whatever it is wisdom that makes sense to you, hopefully, that you can use for your own personal growth. Okay? It's because once a person knows with certainty that he can take control of the path of his own life, his character and his destiny once again rise into being a happy individual. Hope springs eternal. How often have you heard that? Hope springs eternal. It's great. Once you know something's going to work, if you got any new plan in life, all right, anything you're going to start on, maybe it's a new job, a new career, a new romance, whatever it's going to be, my, do we get excited. Remember the last time you met somebody brand new and that spark happened and you were just off the ground for a few days, you know, you're in love and your feet don't touch the floor for about every 10 feet? You know, we just feel marvelous, don't we? Well, that's because there's great hope in the idea that we're about to achieve great happiness, isn't there? Most of life is pleasure or pain. We're either looking for it or running from it all the time. So, you know, be aware of that, work around that, and strive to be happy, as it says. Tolstoy said, the human lives of his spirit and not of the body. When he knows that and does not devote his life to the body, but devotes it to the spirit, then you can put him in chains and lock him behind bars, but he will always be free. That's a pretty easy thing to understand. Once you are certain about your spirit and you have that reliance and confidence of self, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference what kind of turmoil is going on in the material world around you. You can still be that beaming light, that inspirational force that moves through life, creating your own path and being happy. Here's a new idea for you. During our physical lifetime, the material body serves as a dwelling place for the spirit. Now, most of us in the New World or New Age community are going to agree with that, but if you really thought about it a lot, the dwelling place for the spirit. Where is your spirit? Is it in your foot, your hand, your elbow? Have you ever thought about where it is? Have you ever thought of what it might look like? Have you ever considered what your life force might be? Our bodies are electric. There's a pulsing energy that moves through a body that activates all of our little connectors in our brain, which causes all of the chemicals to run through our body and keep it going and performing. Have you ever really tried to meditate on the idea of what a spirit might be? If you really are, if all of us really are spiritual beings, then how come we're not more aware of it? Well, go looking for that. You know, that doesn't mean it's not there, but ask yourself these questions sometimes and in your meditations, and so we'll go looking for the answers that yourself and you'll find them. Through thinking, our character, the path of our very life, and the spiritual development are engraved. And engraved or imprinted is a good word here. I've been talking a lot about how we build up the force and we add things to our spiritual self. We do this through finding new knowledge and making sure that it's exactly right. Get things exactly right before we allow it to become part of ourself. Because when we do that, when we bring some new knowledge into our life, research it well. Look at it like you're doing the, you know, the term paper of your life before you add things to yourself. That's why most of the time we read a book, we just kind of dash across it and go, okay. And we kind of put it in temporary memory. We don't make a part of ourselves because subconsciously we don't have enough information on those ideas yet sometimes to really add it to ourselves, to make an imprint, an impression on our spiritual self. But there'll be a certain point where we've got enough facts about something where it starts to move us and it becomes part of us, and then it makes the material subconscious mind then offers it, so to speak, to the spiritual subconscious mind, your spiritual self over there. It receives the information, and if it's correct, if it's become part of you, it now accepts it. And now that makes a permanent imprint on your spiritual self. And your spiritual self, being the place where all of your accumulated wisdom from lifetimes reside, now moves forward. You've added something to the spiritual energy that not only created your material life, but the one before you, the one before that when there was a different personality, five lifetimes back when it was Larry or Bob or Nancy or whatever. And it will also be there for the next material life that some new persona, personality will be using, which is you under a new personality. Think about that for a while. You, in other words, what you think and so forth becomes a permanent record, you know, not for yourself and for those that are going to go beyond you, and it adds things to the universe itself. Your thoughts don't stop at your ears. They go out into the universe. And depending on if they're thoughts from the material conscious, they're short range on the planet. If they are spiritual thoughts coming from your spiritual self, they almost know no bounds at all, and they race literally through the universe on their own. So we do make engrave ideas into our spiritual self. We want to be cautious of that. The power of thought first forms, when it's first forming, when we come into the life and so forth, and when we're children, the power of our thoughts first form in ideas of good and evil, or good and bad. And then a will is imprinted and built up inside of our spirit about this is a good thing, that's a bad thing, and so forth. That's where it starts, when we start adding things to our psyche and to our spiritual self when we're young. This creates a will, and there's kind of an agreement then, a type of thinking between the spiritual self and the material self, and it starts deciding, well, this is a good thing, and that's a bad thing, and this is evil, and that's whatever, you know. Seen in logical order, first, the activity of thoughts must be installed before a will can be built up and imprinted for a deed to be accomplished. That means first you have a lot of little thoughts, and as you're accumulating information about something and forming all of your little thoughts, as you keep thinking about a subject, it builds up, it concentrates, and then it begins to be a force within you. It's just like my simple analogy earlier of the woman going shopping. All week long, she's thinking about buying those shoes, and by Friday, she is into it, and Saturday, she is off to the mall. She put a lot of energy into that. Well, the same type of process works when you start putting information in yourself. You build up a will about something. You develop an overall approach to life, an attitude that you use to go through life. And that's done with all these little thoughts that we feed ourselves. Once there is imprinted in the spiritual will, a deed is possible. A newborn baby can't make a decision on buying a new car, has absolutely no information about that. But as he grows up and learns about different things and knowledges, eventually someday he will have enough knowledges which will allow him to make a good decision on buying a car, we hope. Okay? Well, without the knowledge, without all the little thoughts, the will would have never, you know, grown up. If a person has to go buy a car and knows nothing about it, then they have to make the decision based on other factors. If they first study and learn all about cars and so forth, then they make a much more logical decision and a better buying decision when they go to get it, right? So, very simply, get educated before you start feeding things to yourself. Be careful what you feed your spirit. Most importantly in this new age, be careful with some of the information that's flying around. People are making all sorts of claims these days about this, that, and the other, and quite a bit of it I don't believe at all. There are very few people in the New Age community, I think, that are really on target that are saying it correctly. Now,
I know most of them mean well, and a lot of them are my friends, but that doesn't mean that I agree with them. I think too often people get overexcited to say, to be, to express, or whatever, without clearly thinking through what they're really doing to themselves and the people around them. Thoughts, remember, also put will in motion. When you've made a lot of small thoughts and created this strong will, this attitude about something, then from that point on it's easily triggered. It is not true that the will puts thoughts into action. It's the other way around. Once you have a will built up within yourself, this collection of knowledge about something, so then you form an attitude about something, that's what a will is. At that point, all it takes to trigger it, to bring it to the forward, is a thought. A thought that deals with that information, and wham, all of your feelings and thoughts run to the forefront, your opinions about how you're going to react to something, right? We do that all the time. You know, advertising does that to us. We just finished up an election for a new president, and most all of us noticed, I think, in this ugly political year, how the parties and the advertising companies were trying so hard to control our votes through the use of negative advertising controls with fear and so forth. They would tell us any sort of crap on there, make up any sort of thing, thinking that most people are going to be motivated to vote because of that. Well, they're triggering the things that are in us. They realize that we are a society that's very sensitive to prejudice, to anger, to value judgments. All they have to do is tell you something nasty about a person, whether it's true or not, and it triggers something in you, some feeling of righteousness that, I'm not voting for that guy if he did that. Well, they rely upon that. Well, don't be fooled so easily. They may have lied to you. And they may have lied to you on purpose, knowing full well how easily you can be triggered with a simple thought, and your entire will then race to the forefront and do a predictable thing. Don't be so predictable. Learn to stay right in balance with yourself so you're not so easily controlled by outside influences. The power which the thoughts use as a stimulus does not originate from man. Now, here's another big idea for you to chew on. When you call upon your spiritual self to actually do something, it's not entirely just from yourself. The amazing part about the spirit is that it is connected actually to creation. What happens is when you have an idea about something and you allow your spiritual self to come forward to actually respond to something new in life or whatever, you know, deed or action you're about to do, if you allow yourself to bring forward your reaction to this new deed from your spirit, what also happens is the power from that spirit, but it flows into your spirit from the immeasurable expanse of all of the universe. In other words, there is a consciousness throughout the universe of higher life forms and lesser life forms. Higher life forms project much more knowledge, of course, than the lower life forms. But out in the universe, within creation itself, there is a consciousness, and your spiritual self draws off of that. It is connected to it all the time because it is a part piece of it. Our spirit selves are part of creation. They came from it. You were always connected to it. That's my point. The idea is then when you have a problem in life and you need to make a decision, you can use that. And you should know all the time that the force of the universe is available out there to you at any given time. An example would be Uri Geller, who quite often gives demonstrations of spoon bending and so forth before large crowds. Well, Uri Geller himself, at least in his early days, couldn't bend the spoon in the dressing room on his own. What he learned to do is he learned to bend the spoon using the consciousness, the power of consciousness, from the people in the audience. At a certain point, I think he developed on and found out that he could use his own spiritual self to draw off the powers of the universe. And this is what happened quite often with people who are psychic and so forth. They learn, or at least they are drawing off, the power of the universe, whether they're aware of it or not. Once they become aware of it, they become even much more powerful. This stems from the vast spiritual abundance of what's called original life, is what Billy calls it. Original life, that's what's responsible for life in the entire universe. Original life is the phrase he uses that refers to the original life force that started the universe that we live in. This mysterious original life personifies the breath of life
which universally gives life to everything in the universe. It's in you. That's your life force that keeps you going. Your spiritual self is attached to that force and can be called upon for strength. It can be used for strength of character. It can be used to develop some of our more famous New Age ideas like telekinetic energies and levitation, telepathy. But most importantly, it gives you force of self, strength of conviction, self-reliance, confidence, abilities to see into the future, ability to always tap into the subconscious self. Imagine the ability at any given time to use your spirit to tap into a knowledge bank or a consciousness in the Akashic Records to know the answers to things at all times. Sometimes channelers tell us that they're hooked to a great knowledgeable being somewhere where information is just flowing into them. Now, as you know, I don't believe in channeling. I think it's the wrong way to actually use the mind. I believe that channeling is nothing more than euphoric meditation gone bad, that a person's own persona creates these things. Where I've seen some channelers, though, they get back on track and actually develop their spirit to the point where they use the spiritual we form that the Pleiadians talk about, that power of your spiritual self, which really is connected to the creation and the consciousness of the universe. It can also be used at all times to kind of keep an open line to the Akashic Records. After a certain period of development of meditation, it's possible to have that line open all the time, where you can call upon information from the Akashic or higher life forces to give you advice about perhaps most anything that you would want to know. Imagine being able to go through life and never really face a difficult problem because everything seems easy to you. It always goes your way. Well, certainly that can be developed. The force of your spirit can become so strong that you are always lucky. The force of your spirit can be developed so strong that you always have the ability to keep an open channel to a larger consciousness in the universe. That is certainly possible. Many people do it with nothing more than thinking properly, thinking in a balanced state of mind, and always thinking with the idea of a mind that they're doing things for the right reasons. Integrity of thought brings it forward. So, this mysterious original life that Billy's calling out here, this life force, that's part of the secret of creation. This is the part of thing man may never fully understand exactly how the creation operates, but now we know that it is there. We know there's a spiritual self there, and we're beginning to find out we're connected to it. And as you practice your exercises of meditation and meditation immersion, you too will feel it. You'll find it in yourself, your connection to it, and then there will be this great feeling of fulfillment and happiness to know that you really are a spiritual being and that you are connected to something much larger and greater than the simple material existence or the environment that you live in. Next thing I'd like to touch on, and something you've got to spend a little time dwelling on, is how we make ourselves sick through wrong thinking. Perhaps you've heard of, late in the past few years, more and more people have come across the idea that how we think actually affects our body. Many doctors are getting on to that. I want to point out one little thing to you here for you to think about along these lines. If we allow ourselves to think improperly, we react to things with rage, anger, depression, and so forth. If we get ourselves out of control, let's say you're in a situation somewhere and something happens and it touches part of you that causes rage and anger and you want to strike out somehow and you feel suddenly the urge to either defend yourself in a situation or you feel such hate and anger you might actually pick up something and throw something at somebody. Now, of course, I'm only talking about individuals here which are prone to getting out of control, but we seem to have more and more of those in our society these days. But I use that as an example because I want to point out what happens inside the individual when that happens. While we're in these states of excitement, we promote an overstimulation of the adrenal glands. These are located right over the kidneys. Sometimes we call these the crazy glands. They discharge kind of a digestive matter and overflow the blood with the fighting strength, invigorating chemicals whenever the human prepares himself for some sort of alteration and you need extra strength. So adrenaline pumps into the blood and gets you going, but adrenaline is normally neutralized then. You know, when the anger calms down and you're trying to get yourself back together, well, there's kind of a calming acid solution, a milky acid solution that comes out from the muscles of the body. It soothes us and calms us down.
But quite often it's not enough, and there's an extra adrenaline that's left in the body that causes like aggressiveness and this readiness to fight where you just can't calm down. Well, because normally the body is prepared for you to get a little angry and aggressive sometimes, so it can normally secrete this milky solution which will calm you down. But if you get too far out of control, my point is there's too much adrenaline in your blood and you can't calm it down, and it has an effect then. Okay? This can create illness. Adrenaline is only neutralized then when the anger or the fighting is over, whatever's calling it. And then if this calming effect isn't strong enough, it lingers on in the body. What actually happens is that if your inner life, your inside self, your psyche is living in such an uproar with anger and in turmoil, the muscles are unable to discharge enough of this milky acid solution to smooth out the human. The extra adrenaline causes aggressiveness. You had this tendency to fight. This has an adverse effect on us. Sometimes it'll make your stomach even contract. Your intestines and other organs and nerves have a disquieting effect inside and start reacting to all this extra adrenaline that's in your body. It causes a number of ailments. It'll cause nervous trembling. If you've ever even been like in a fist fight or something, got pushed into it somehow or whatever, you find yourself just trembling and out of control, that's what's going on. Headaches, dizzy spells, liver, kidney ailments, gallbladder problems. It can cause digestive troubles, ulcers, constipation, diarrhea, any number of sort of things. My point is that when we find ourselves living out of balance, not living spiritually, allowing ourselves to get carried away because of material aggression problems, hate, anger, and so forth, that chemically we actually do damage our body. That since there is not enough calming acid secreted by the muscles, the extra adrenaline left over in the body gets into the blood and causes slowly these build up, these ailments. And for a person who regularly gets angry or hostile or violent, something like that, they're going to get sick. These are not going to be happy, long-living people. So it should be obvious that to avoid these many kinds of illnesses, we need to learn to control our thinking so we don't get caught up in these moods. A person who lives a spiritual life, it would never happen to. They would walk away from any situation like that, or they can very calmly look at a situation. Professional people learn this. If you find somebody in the professional walks of life who is continuously in front of the public or in dealing with crowds of different types and so forth, they learn to listen to information and let it kind of bounce off of them. They see it just exactly for what it is. I'm reminded of Ross Perot once, and he was on a Peter Jennings show, and he was attacked by several members of the audience with some very irrational statements that were obviously only being said out of hate and anger to try to hurt his feelings and make him look bad on television. Peter Jennings, which I thought was interesting, seems to allow this and even chose the people that said it, so it doesn't say much for him either. But all this hate and anger was directed at Ross Perot. Well, being ever bit the mature, developed individual, he did not react to it in anger. He did not lash out at the individual with anger. He very calmly dealt with the situation and continued on with his explanation, very much in control of himself. Not that it probably wasn't a little upsetting to him when he was first attacked, because that often happens to us in some place where somebody says something very unkind about you. Most of us will usually get embarrassed and just walk away or feel hurt. But there's no need for that either. We need to learn to see things as they are, see that someone was actually attacking you for some irrational reason, and not allow yourself to either get hate, anger build up inside of you, or not allow yourself to feel depression either, because even that is harmful to us. Anytime we're way out of balance one way or the other, then we are causing ourselves problems on the inside, both in our psyche and in our physical body. Okay, another interesting little thing to talk to about here is the aura. Some of you may have heard that we have auras. Lately, the last year or two, I noticed that you go to some of these expos and so forth, and there will be people there taking pictures of your aura. Well, this came about years ago, I believe at UCLA, many years ago. They discovered through a Russian technique called Kirlian photography that using certain types of film, they could actually get a picture of some sort of magnetic field of energy around the body. And commonly this will extend out a few inches, maybe up to a foot on some people. And it has different colors in it. And for a while, nobody had any idea what this is. Well, let me tell you a little bit about what it is based on what Billy has told me. Everyone has a field of spiritual force around himself. This reflects your intellectual greatness and your thinking about yourself. It's projected by your psyche and your spiritual self. This aura can be interpreted in the field of good or bad as related to the thinking of the individual. In other words, within the aura, certain colors can be red, and you can see how people respond to things, if they agree, if they think it's a good thing or a bad thing. It reflects failure or successes because it always radiates in accordance with how you're thinking. If you could see the aura all the time very vividly, like on videotape or something, and you talk to a person and ask them a number of questions and put them into different moods, maybe use lighting and so forth and cause them to feel, you know, lighting and music and get them into a happy mood or a loving mood or a romantic mood and made them feel really good about themselves. And then maybe you said you would see certain things in their aura which reflect that. If you caught that same person in a kind of an angry, upset, frustrated mood, then you would see different colors in the aura. So the aura is capable of reflecting and demonstrating the mood that we are in and the knowledge that we have. Now, when we go to use our aura for healing someone else, remember that the aura actually is a magnetic field. There are waves of electronic impulses in that field. So when you are attempting to help someone else, what kind of mood do you want to be in? If you think you're going to loan your aura, so to speak, and merge your aura with someone else, either with your hands or however you're going to do it, in order to be a beneficial to a sick person, what kind of mood would you want to be in that would cause your aura to be in a certain state? Well, naturally, you'd want it to be in a healthy one, wouldn't you? You wouldn't want to be angry or upset or frustrated or depressed or something, because then that will reflect in your aura. That will reflect in the energy, the magnetic field around your body, and that's no good for somebody else. Likewise, you don't want your ego to get out of control thinking you're really hot stuff and you're going to, I'll fix you up, I can heal anybody, that sort of attitude. I'm wonderful, I'm a psychic, I do this for a living, I know what I'm doing, I read a book on it. You know, whatever it may be. I've run into people like that that think they are just, you know, God's gift to the healing world. All they have to do is be around you and everything will be wonderful. Well, that would be great if it was true, but most time these people aren't at all. They just think, you know, they do whatever they're going to do, and if you don't respond, they say, well, it's a problem with you. You know, there's something wrong with you that normally works. I don't understand it. So we do have an aura. It is a magnetic field. It does reflect our feelings and thoughts. It also reflects our intelligence. It also radiates the reflections of things like love, hate, satisfaction or dissatisfaction. You can read greed, envy, vice, passion, grievance, despair, doubt, revenge, need, which is a biggie in our society, misery, courage, fear, loyalty, humility, happiness, understanding, balance, energy, and realization. All of these things can be determined and read in an aura once a person is astute and knows exactly what to look for. So an aura is a reflection of how you're thinking at the time and a reflection of the knowledge, the intelligent knowledge that is within you. If you want to have a little fun with that sometime, get a picture of your aura taken. I believe it's there are certain Polaroid films that capture it, but you want to make sure that, that it's not being faked. I've seen some people that are just taking lights and flashing lights right onto your body and causing whatever colors to come out just for kind of entertainment value. But if you get an opportunity to actually have it done with someone who has a good process, who knows what they're doing and is using the right equipment, it can be very fascinating to actually see your aura. There are many psychic people who can see your aura, whose eyes, they are tuned to sensitive frequencies in the air, and they can actually see your aura in certain conditions. And if you can find someone like that, who that you can trust to be honest and so forth and not try to, like, you know, just hustle you for some money, find someone like that who knows what they're really doing and have them tell you all about your aura, the colors, how thick it is, how far it extends out from the body. Learn to understand a little bit about it, and then perhaps you can maybe learn to even see your own aura. Then you would know more about yourself all the time and be able to know how you're responding. Well, here's an interesting idea for you. I got another thought for you. Imagine what it would be like if we could get everybody on the planet now to listen to all these ideas, to learn how to meditate, to study and learn more about themselves, to use meditative immersion to develop and learn about themselves and start reprogramming their thoughts, to learn new knowledge about things and put it into your spiritual self so your personality and character changes. At a certain point, suddenly integrity is going to go up, isn't it? Pretty soon there's far less concern for the material things in life. There's less worry. There's less need and fear. Suddenly everybody's kind of reasonably happy and getting along well. Now, what would it be like if the whole world thought like that? My, my. Well, just think about these ideas for a little bit. One, there would be an end to religions. There would be no more war. We would have no more, you know, discord and arguing among ourselves. There wouldn't be any more hunger, because we'd care so much about each other that we would feed each other. Plus, people that are well-balanced and so forth will learn to take care of themselves. Quite often, many of the people in nature that are starving and hungry and so forth, quite often it's because they just don't take any responsibility for their own lives. Or maybe they're just not able. That's also the case. The financial industry would probably disappear, because economics, which is really kind of a lousy idea when you get to thinking about it, it was obviously designed by a handful of rich people somewhere, because it doesn't really serve the lower classes. It was designed by rich people for control. So it's going to have to change. Probably within 50 to 100 years, economics may actually even disappear on the planet, because it's not really an equitable system that provides quality of life for everyone. So we'll come up with a better system somewhere. We would probably stop manufacturing equipment for war. There wouldn't be any demand. We wouldn't be at war with each other if we all looked at each other as spiritual beings on our own path. If prejudice, hate, and anger kind of dissipated and went away, certain businessmen could no longer launch their dirty schemes. The so-called New York bankers and the Bilderbergers and all of these guys, who the big money power people of the world, who really pull the purse strings and make the world jump, well, they wouldn't have a job anymore. They probably wouldn't even know how to react in life if they didn't have their money. There'd be no more popes, priests, politicians, rabbis, gurus, or bishops. What would they do for a living then? All right, so much for daydreaming about the perfect world. There is one way we can start causing us to our world to move towards a more euphoric state of mind, though. I shouldn't say euphoric. I always used to think of euphoric like we did when we were a kid, when we euphoria, like a city somewhere where everything is perfect. Okay, but there are ways that we can cause, even individually, we can start causing things to get better on our world. And that has to do with our thoughts also. Because I want you to be aware of something else here. Be aware that your thoughts, even though they're not heard audibly, do radiate beyond your aura. They affect plants, animals, and other people around you. Now, what I'm talking about is when you create a thought in your mind, and there's some force put into it, that thought actually creates an electrical charge in your brain. That electrical charge actually, depending on where it comes from in your brain, if it's from your conscious or your spiritual self, has a certain range to it, a distance to it. And when that thought leaves your mind and moves outside of your body, it goes beyond your aura. It affects out into the aura and is reflected in the aura, as you think, but it goes beyond the aura also. So if you think and radiate evil, hate, anger, distrust, or whatever, this goes out into the world and it affects everybody around you. There is a consciousness. There is kind of like an open party line, an open telephone line among all people at the subconscious level. For instance, ask anybody who was around Los Angeles during the riots, when tens of thousands of people rose up in anger and were rioting and were burning buildings and, you know, trying to harm one another. Well, that certainly flows out into the consciousness of the people. Many people, I'm sure, if you ask them, could feel that in their own subconscious. It has an effect. There are over 5 billion people right now alive on the planet Earth. All of those people, very few of them, have any respect for the planet itself. They don't even think about the planet. And this has to be a contributing factor into some of the natural disasters and problems that we're going to be facing in the future. Let's think about earthquakes, problem with lower life forms, microspecies. Let's think about problems we might have among the animals and so forth. Maybe we're causing some of that. Maybe we get to a point of population where society is so out of control, there's so much anger and war going on, which we're getting close to if you just watch the news today. All of those thoughts out there create so much fear, prejudice, and so forth. They affect all of us. Well, fortunately, you can protect yourself from conscious thoughts, material conscious thoughts, because those are what Billy calls just primary telepathy. It's on the material side of the mind. Thoughts created by the material consciousness and so forth, you can block against them. You can put up strong feelings of self-protection, of happiness, of love and light around yourself. It's a very powerful force. You can tell yourself daily that I am protected by an aura of love and charm and happiness. And it serves well, because remember, our aura all around us reflects how we think, right? Well, if you are invaded by outside influences and thoughts that affect your subconscious mind and come in and might make you feel just a little down, a little depressed, or a little fearful of all the things that are going on out there, if you feel that trigger happen, if you feel a little down, stop for a few moments. Meditate on the idea of power and love, of universal love. Change your aura to being an aura of strong strength, of love and light, and it becomes forceful. You become very powerful. Within just seconds or minutes, you'll feel your powerful feeling of confidence and self-reliance come back, and the outside world then will bounce off of you. You'll be able to perceive it then from a very balanced viewpoint. And you will also perceive the sadness and all the problems and the anger out there more correctly. You will not respond to them then with any sort of hate or anger, but you will also be giving off your own feelings of unconditional love back to these people who are suffering out there. After all, we must start looking at people that, if they're full of hate and anger and whatever they're doing out there, they're very unhappy. And let's don't look at them as something to strike back at. Let's look at it as another spirit which has been misled. It's another spiritual person, just like ourselves, who's having problems in life. Even if they may appear to be violent or whatever, these are the people that really need our love and really need our help. These are the people who are out of control. These are the people who need inspiration. These are the people who need our help and our inspiration to show them what is correct, how to live properly. And through ourselves, through using ourselves as role models, we can do that. You know, if you find five or six people that are like a gang or something, you could handle a gang. You could talk to people in a gang, explain the concepts we're talking about of how to develop happy thinking through power of self and meditation and so forth. At first, they're going to laugh at you. You've got to expect that. But if you get a chance to work with these people, slowly there will be a breakthrough. If you can get them to calm down, even start with some simple breathing techniques to just breathe, and so forth, and calm themselves down. And then maybe separate them a little bit so that their collective consciousness, which contributes to their anger, is dissipated somewhat. Get them alone individually, and they lose some of that violent strength. Get them alone and start calming them down, and then start teaching them some things. Provide them with some new knowledge, some new things to think about. Show them some new ways. And over a period of time, you could bring that person back into being a happy, well-balanced person. Think of all people in the world as happy, balanced, spiritual people, because the spirit itself never gets out of balance. It's always in there. It never gets illogical. So think of them as their spirits out there, that they're trapped somehow inside of some sort of body that's gone crazy, that this material body out there is infected like with a spiritual disease. So we have to look at them like they just need some help. And what is help to a person who spiritually is trying to defend themselves? Most common help is just to offer them your unconditional love, your logic, your clarity of thinking, so they can sort their problems out. All right, one other thing I want to touch on here is called power thinking. That's a phrase that Billy uses in his book, Power Thinking. He says, since thoughts can be so powerful and not affect ourselves but the world around us, they are the most powerful form of energy there is. He says, remember that the creation started the whole universe with only a thought, which manifested itself into matter and created all there is. So thought is very powerful. No one can really resist a healthy, purposeful, and strong thought. You know, and in any argument or discussion you get into, the last word is usually the person who has the most clear, well-thought-out, logical statement which brings the argument to a conclusion, the last word on the subject. A good thought is usually filled with what he calls the absolute awareness of the unity with creation. In other words, when you are aware that you are part of creation, that you are connected to it, and you speak from the Spirit, then you are actually speaking with the highest possible logical mind that you can at the time. That's a good thought. Correct power consciousness and positive thinking dissolves all of your difficulties. Well, it does. We've talked about, you know, how you can make yourself feel ill with poor thinking. Likewise, you can also make yourself feel very well with correct thinking. So you also want to learn to control the size of your problems. You know, if you think of them as small, they are. If you start concentrating on a problem and causing it to enlarge and put a lot of energy into your problem, it'll swell up inside of your thinking, kind of like a storm, and it becomes very difficult to knock it down. The strength of thinking and the application of power thinking requires an education. At first, it can seem a little difficult because it's new and seems a little bit strange, but you do actually get used to it. You know, actually, it's very easy. Once you start the simple and correct ideas in motion, your thinking will kind of begin to flow. Things move very quickly inside of your mind when you actually do something on purpose. The whole instrument of thinking, the whole concept of the way that your mind works will change very rapidly to accommodate new forms of thought. It seems to like it. You know, once you offer your mind some food, your subconscious some food, it takes to it very quickly. All the equipment, you know, associated with the brain, your neural connectors and everything, they all seem to change like an energy level, and they transform kind of like an electric transformer somehow. You get this shot of energy going through your brain. It's just a short time until power thinking takes over and becomes the norm. Now, of course, practice makes a master out of anyone, so if you practice this idea of power thinking, it becomes a habit. Power thinking, of course, is nothing more than the developing of the power of the Spirit by continually concentrating and reinforcing thoughts that are correct and logical. And as you do that, you think stronger and stronger about things, and you develop a force, powerful thinkers, where we are actually in control of our thoughts all of the time. Most people, unfortunately, are not. We are a planet of over 5 billion people, like 5 billion, 400 million, something like that. Most of them are not in control of their thoughts. Very few people are, as a matter of fact. Most people just go along with their conscious mind, not aware that their subconscious is even there, or what it's doing, or what kind of plans are going on. We just fall kind of the mercy of our experiences that we have. And we build up all of our emotions and attitudes and so forth, our pre-programmed responses to life. These all build up, and that's how we respond. Then we find ourselves, you know, halfway down through the road of life, feeling depressed or negative or things aren't going our way, and we're wondering how we're going to be successful, or we're really wondering what success is. Is it a lot of money, a lot of love, a lot of happiness? Most people can't even give you a clear answer. Unfortunately, the society we're in isn't very clear on that either. You can't really get a straight answer out of anybody. Most people, I think, would, at least in America, tend to think that a successful life would be one that has a lot of money, a lot of material things. After all, America is founded on the principle of capitalism, the idea that money rules the world, and that if you have money, you can get the stuff. If you don't have the stuff, then you're not doing very well. We see bumper stickers that say things like, you know, he who has the most toys when he dies wins, things like that. So capitalism, or the acquirement of material thing, is greatly promoted in this country. Which one thing, it's led us to be prosperous, we call it, because we enjoy a higher quality of material life here than the rest of the world does. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we are the happiest people. It doesn't necessarily mean we're the people of most love and compassion. And I think the last few years you'd find a lot of Americans questioning exactly what state we are in. We've just gone through the 1992 elections, and for the most part, the majority of the people in the United States are beginning to understand that we need change. We have to do something about our systems, our social system, our economic system, and our system of politics are not serving us currently today. And people are finding out that we're going to have to get involved to change it. And that if we don't do anything about the political system and the economic system, those that are running it for their own benefit will continue doing so, and it will keep going down the same path that it is. Well, if we want to take our country back and increase the quality of life here, we have to start getting involved, don't we? It's the same way with your own mind. If you want to increase the quality of your personal life, you have to start becoming responsible for how you think.
So consequently, you will want to develop what I called power thinking. Interestingly enough, when you think, here's a concept that most of you probably haven't thought about, and I want to introduce an idea to you called the boomerang. And this is not a handheld device that you're going to throw in the air, but it works kind of like that. You know, a boomerang, for those of you who are not real familiar with it, it's a little device that they use in Australia, and actually I think was originally designed for hunting. And it looks like a little piece of wood that's bent in the middle, so it's kind of in a V shape. And you grab one corner and throw it out real hard, and it goes out spinning in the air, and then it comes back. It hits the air, it turns around, it comes back, and you can grab it again. That's called a boomerang. So the idea is that it's something that can be sent out and come back. Well, the reason I brought this up is that thoughts can be sent out, and they do come back. Now, most of us are content to think that as we think, no one hears it, right? And it probably doesn't have any effect on anybody else. As a matter of fact, we don't know if telepathy for sure even exists. Maybe it's just something in the movies. And most of us walking around harboring all sorts of thoughts in our mind that we would be embarrassed to death to have anybody else hear. Imagine how it would change the world if suddenly tomorrow at noon, everybody on the planet was very, very telepathic and able to listen to everybody else's thoughts. Why, we'd all be scrambling like crazy to hide all of our little private stuff. Plus, we'd have to learn a whole new method of how we talk to one another, because our true feelings would really come out. I would probably eliminate politics, wouldn't it? Well, we're not all going to become telepathic tomorrow. However, our thoughts, which may be a surprise to a lot of you, do not just stay within your own mind. When you think a thought, if you may remember 8th grade science, all those little connectors inside of your brain, all those little neural connectors, dendrites, synaptic junctions, and so forth, when we make a thought, there's actually an electrical charge formed in the brain. It affects the chemicals in your body. They receive the electrical charge, and that affects all the cells in your body. But there is an electrical charge formed. So our mind does create energy, you might say. When we think, there's a very small, minute charge. And depending upon the force of thought, that charge may vary in intensity. The thing here to bring out is the fact that once you create that thought, it doesn't stay just in your mind. It actually goes out into the universe. It leaves your mind, goes beyond your skull, and goes out into the universe. Now let's that thought, by the way, when it goes out, will return also to your mind. Now here's some interesting things. A thought, when you think it, isn't necessarily exactly what you think it is. We all have thoughts like positive and negative thoughts. We think about a positive thought is something that we think about love or happiness, or a positive thought may be a reaffirmation of our self-reliance or our confidence. Or we have a positive thought about how we walk, address, or so forth, how we think about ourselves. Negative thoughts could be thoughts of depression, anxiety, hate, anger, and so forth. There's a lot of that in the world, prejudice. So thoughts, when we think them, we can generally always define them as either a positive thought or a negative thought. And then right in the middle somewhere would be like neutral, where the thought really just didn't have any charge at all to it. It was just kind of a neutral thought with no positive or negative attached to it whatsoever. But for the most part, thoughts are positive and negative, because everything in the universe is good and bad, moral, immoral, off and on, plus or minus, whatever. That's just the way things work. When you think a thought, and let's say it's a very positive thought, and you send it out, it goes out into the universe, whether you're aware of it or not. At a certain point, it will reach its maximum distance that it can travel by virtue of its concentration and its energy. And when it gets out there, it affects things along the way, because thoughts are energy and they are perceived and felt by other subconsciouses. So that thought will go out a certain distance, and then something unique happens. It's polarized. It's kind of like a magnet. If you send a thought out, it comes back almost in an opposing form. If it's a very positive thought, it comes back in kind of a negative form. And here's what I mean by that. A thought is actually composed of two things. A thought is composed, one, of the actual information, what you're thinking of, and two, it's composed also of the energy it took to hurl that thought out into the universe. So we have two parts here. We have the actual information or thought that you think of, And then we have the energy it took to throw that thought out into the universe. When the thought goes out, that positive thought that you've created goes out into the universe, the boomerang effect comes into place. The thought will reach its maximum distance, and it will then come back to you. It's the same thought. The thought itself doesn't change, but the energy form which is carrying it or hurling it away changes. So, if it was a very positive thought, it will now be changed to a negative charge and come back into you. And that thought literally slams back into your mind. When it does, then, we find that even though the information comes back the same, it's producing a slightly different effect in our mind. And when it comes back in now as a negative form with a negative charge, that means almost that this thought comes back in and forces us to reconsider that same thought, perhaps from a slightly different viewpoint, maybe from more of a negative angle. Likewise, if we were to send out a very negative thought out there and send that out, it would come back in negative form. The same information would come back, but probably with a different consideration, different view, because it has the charge is slightly different now. So the thought itself goes out and comes back, but the energy by which carries it polarizes and returns the opposite polarization. Okay? So what we're working for here in our evolution is the fact that we can send thoughts out, and we can send them out positive. They'll come back, forcing us probably to consider them kind of from a negative viewpoint. We then put our mind to work, start crunching away and thinking about this idea, and that forces growth. You see, the universe has to be negative and positive all the time. If everything was really good, then there wouldn't be any way of learning. It would just be like stagnation. But the creation itself is constantly evolving, and so are we. And this is the learning process. This also starts to begin to point out the fact that how valuable an open mind is. If you send thoughts out all the time, if you're negative about everything that goes out all the time, and you refuse to consider any positive sides to an argument or any other positive information about that, you become very closed-minded. Then your learning is stagnated, right? Because if you refuse to consider any other viewpoint, like you know all there is to know now, that's it, I'm a know-it-all, well, that stumps your growth. So an open mind is actually a sign of intelligence. It's a sign of clear thinking. It's a sign of growth. If a person does continue to think negative, maybe they're the type of person that's always saying, oh, I can't do that, or that's too difficult, or, oh, I'm just never successful at those sort of things. Just can't handle it, or they're always depressed, you know, things just don't go my way. No, I don't want to go out. I'm just going to stay home and watch TV. They just kind of get a poor, sad, woe is me view towards life. Well, as they continue to reinforce that type of thinking, what are they doing? They're programming their brain to believe it. Their subconscious now believes it, and that's who they become. So the effects of this negative thinking then really pull them down, almost does not allow them at all to consider anything positive about their life because they're convinced there just couldn't be anything positive. So they're not paying any attention at all to this potential, boomerang effect that's actually going on. The boomerang effect, you have to learn to sense it. You have to learn to watch for it. Thoughts will come back very quickly, at least within 3 days. And when they come back, if you're open to it, if you program yourself to pay attention and feel for it, it means that you may send a thought out, and when it comes back, it'll come back in kind of the form like to be able to consider that thought from an opposing viewpoint or a slightly different attitude towards it. And if you can do that, then that's what growth is all about. You consider things from different directions and allow other information to come in. Real positive thinking is actually neutral positive. When you have a balance between your positive thinking about something and your negative, when you've considered all the different viewpoints, and then you come to kind of a neutral point of view, but you've considered everything, that's what positive thinking actually is. Positive thinking isn't just thinking everything always positive, because you're not considering the other viewpoints then. So you're not really learning anything. You're only considering your viewpoint. So allow negative thoughts and positive thoughts to come along, and that really translates to mean considering both sides of things. Be open-minded and learn that your real positive thinking is what happens after considering both sides. You reach conclusions that allows you to balance out the positive and the neutral. In other words, anyone can actually learn to control their thinking and control their life. Paying attention and learning to observe the boomerang effect that happens in our mind all the time is a method by which we can start to monitor our thoughts and understand how we think. Well, I've talked a lot about thinking and power. What all this leads to, really, if you'll remember the diagram from our material side and our spiritual side, is that a person who has a stricken or sick psyche is a person who is thinking improperly or illogically, and over a period of time, their psyche, which is our feelings, our persona, our thinking about things and so forth, our sensitivity to the world, our viewpoint, our approach, our attitude, our paradigm, all these things fall within the realm of what a psyche is. When our psyche's got to the point where it's sick, that means a person who has continually, through reinforced negative thinking, is creating illness in the psyche. Okay? That has to be changed. And that's not real simple, but it's quite possible. If a person has found themselves in a particular point in life where there's been so much reinforced negative thinking year after year, even though it might be slight, it just builds up. It gets reinforced. The psyche then, and let's think of the psyche then as really our viewpoint of the world, our approach to life, how we view the world. At that point, our psyche then becomes ill, which means that the psyche just has a negative or sick sort of viewpoint of life. It can no longer think healthy, happy, positive, lively, lovely. It's not capable of the beautiful thought, of the positive thought. It cannot create a happy future for itself because it is convinced that life is negative, life is not good. Well, we have to do something about that, though, because the negative, here's what happens. When we go about fixing a stricken psyche, we'll call it stricken or ill psyche, if we find ourselves in that position or someone else, how do we fix it? How do we cure a stricken psyche? Well, to begin with, to refer back to our diagram of the material and the spiritual, let's be reminded of one thing, how the mechanism works. The conscious mind gathers the information. It very quickly then checks with the subconscious mind to see what data we have on that. The subconscious mind is the computer, the motor, how we do things, our working machinery that helps us create our logic. The subconscious mind is a storehouse, the memory block of all of our experiences that we have in our material life. So by virtue of that, it develops its own will, its own attitudes, emotions, and feelings about, not feelings, but attitudes about things. It has knee-jerk response. It's your inventory of data on stuff. So a thought comes in, say, someone comes up to you and says, would you like to donate $50 to this worthy cause here? We're going to save this special tree that grows out in the forest. And maybe you have an attitude about trees or whatever. That attitude comes forward and your subconscious responds. If you have a very negative attitude about a lot of things, your overall will or your overall subconscious reaction to things becomes very negative. If you've reached a point where you view the world negatively, then your subconscious reacts to everything that way. And every time you're presented with new information or something in life to confront, you're going to react negatively. Of course, you won't think so. That's just who you are. But to the outside world, it will be easy to spot you. Well, when your psyche becomes stricken, the problem is that we can start to change how we feel about things and our attitude about life and our psyche. We can, but the problem is your subconscious is going to have to want to play a part in that all the time. So we have to stop that. We have to learn to curb the constant negative attitude of our own subconscious, which we've programmed over the years all the time. See, that's a result of constant worrying and negative thinking all the time. It builds up this power. Power thinking becomes negative. The consciousness of the stricken psyche must start to control the subconscious until the subconscious acknowledges the way of thinking of the consciousness as a knowledgeable fact. That means we've got to persuade, or we have to reprogram the subconscious somehow. And we're going to have to find a way of doing that. Because the subconscious ultimately dictates the feelings of the psyche. And we've got to make the psyche healthy by reprogramming the subconscious. And that's not real simple. And in fact, it's kind of difficult because every time we try to think in a more positive fashion or in a happier fashion, a happier thought, the subconscious is going to send out all of its negative thoughts. After all, it's just loaded with them. So every time you would try to daydream or, try to have a positive approach to something, your subconscious is going to beat it down. Now, if you've ever talked to someone who basically has a negative view of life or just isn't getting anywhere, it's exactly what you find, isn't it? If you know someone and you're trying to encourage them maybe to do something in life or start a new career, say, for instance, and you're explaining to them, oh, you're going to be good at it. You're qualified at this. Why don't you sign up and take a course in that? Learn something about it. And, you know, you can better yourself. And they're sitting there going, I don't know. Well, I don't have the money for the class. And, well, I don't have a way to get there. My car doesn't work very good. And, well, a friend of mine took that class and they didn't do very good. What's happening here? Every time you try to suggest a positive thought to change their view of their life, that built-up view that's in their psyche, what's happening? The subconscious keeps emerging with a whiny, negative attitude why they can't do it. So we have to break through to this person somehow. We have to break through and start reprogramming them with positive thoughts until the subconscious starts getting some new programming, catches on, finally dumps or gets rid of all of its negative attitudes towards everything. We have to convince this person or teach this person about the power of themselves. They have to learn to find that self-reliance and the confidence. You cannot do it for them. You can lead them along with logic, with clarity of thought, and you can explain to them how it's possible. Now, the problem is that people generally, when they become negative, they think it's insurmountable. They think their problem is so big that there's just no way to fix it. You know, if you're trying to suggest to this person that they start a new career or whatever, and they have 30 minutes of reasons why it isn't going to work, I haven't got the money, oh, I probably couldn't get a job anyway, or it's too far to drive, or I don't have Wednesday nights free. They got all these reasons why they can't do this thing, right? Well, they just can't get a positive thought together. You got to find some way to get this person to want to start thinking positive about putting themselves together. Well, there's one thing you can suggest to them. And this works if you are a person who's not too far gone, where you can actually get the will together to try to change the way you think. Suggest to them that they daydream. The best neutral positive thinking is a daydream. Now, a daydream, this is what I mean by a daydream. A daydream is where you just sit down and focus on some fantasy or some positive thing. Allow yourself to get lost in the daydream. And this is the kind of daydream where everything goes your own way. You know, where you just lead these people in and explain to them they need to daydream about a wonderful life. Beautiful things, love, a great fantasy of something that they really enjoy. And what happens here when that starts doing that? Well, this person will experience something a little bit different, won't they? They'll start catching on to the idea that things can go well for them. They'll at least start enforcing the thought idea that they can't have a positive thought. It might even be surprising to some people who aren't used to doing that. Another thing about the daydream should always be in the present tense. And by that I mean, don't daydream about what may be someday. If you have the kind of daydream where you're wishing that, gee, maybe in 3 or 4 years I could take that class, or maybe someday I could get the money together to do that. What's happening? The subconscious is creeping in and creating that negativity because they're not looking at it as something positive they could really do. They're turning this daydream into just one more negative approach. So the daydream is always in the present tense. It's right now. I am doing this. I am feeling good. I am happy. I am strong. I am going to class. I can do this. Keep everything in the present tense. I am thinking positive about this course. You know, I'm going to better myself. Look at things that you're going to do right now on the spot. Because that way, you keep the subconscious from negatively knocking down what's going on. If you think in this future wish mode way, the subconscious will keep coming back with a negative solution or reason why you can't do something. So don't do that. Keep your daydream in the present tense. Remember, logic is built on certainty, not illogical thinking. Now, certainty is the ability to think clearly about something right now and build power in it, isn't it? We talked about how to develop power of your thinking. So if you're correcting a stricken or ill psyche, daydreaming is a good way of doing it. Keep it in the present tense and encourage or learn how to develop positive thinking. What will happen is, as you continue the daydreaming, And as you continue the fantasy about right now how good things are, how swell you are, pretty soon what happens is your subconscious starts catching on. It starts slowly getting reprogrammed. It starts slowly learning that it can handle positive thoughts. And there'll be kind of a breakthrough slowly with the individual where they'll find kind of a light, you know, at the end of the tunnel. And they'll start saying, well, I guess it wasn't quite so bad. And if they keep trying to reaffirm positive affirmations of themselves and start hanging out with different people, get around positive people, get around successful people, get around people who have strong force of mind, change their friends, their environment, and so forth, their world will change. And it can happen very fast. Sometimes it can happen within days with people that really don't have a big problem. Some people may take several months. Some people may not have as big a problem as they thought. Maybe they're just lonely. You know, all they really need is a new relationship or something. They just perk right up. We've all seen people that suddenly we see them and boy, how they've changed. They just seem to be all perky and alive. Might have only been one or two events in their life that were really holding them back. Okay, in Billy's book on the psyche, he has a couple of things in there that are kind of interesting. One are the three golden rules of positive thinking. And another that he called the 10 laws of health or something. There's like the 10 ideas of good spiritual health. I thought these would be interesting, and so I want to go over them with you and explain to you how he wrote them out. The three golden rules of positive thinking. If the three golden rules, by the way, if you stick to these three golden rules, Billy says you can expect results right away, perhaps with your problems within 3 to 7 days in average cases. You know, if you don't really have too many difficulties, maybe just a few minutes or an hour of just thinking like this, and you'll perk right up. If you've got a lot of serious problems, you may have to really stick to these things for several months. One is the first golden rule is what I was just going over, which is the daydreaming. Get a good daydream that allows fantasies and imagination, building castles in the sky, whatever it is. Learn to daydream well and develop good role models for yourself. Create pleasure in your life. Daydream that things right now are going well for you. See yourself as having a great time, a beautiful romance, a beautiful relationship. There's love in your life. Imagine these things that happen because you're starting to enforce the fact, the idea that this can be you, that this is you, that all you really need is forceful thinking, strong will. As you think, so you shall be. Okay? You'll find right away that it gives you kind of a lift in your emotions and you feel a little more lighthearted when you get the weight of negative thinking off of you. Focus on positive daydreaming. Focus on positive fantasies and role modeling about yourself. And you forget all about your problems. At a certain point when you're able to push the subconscious negative thinking out of your mind, you'll feel better. And you'll just kind of come out of the fantasy going, whew, that felt good. And you'll want to go back there. Well, don't hang out there forever. It's just a way of, getting yourself back together. So just keep working at it until you break up the ability of the subconscious to keep sending you negative thoughts all the time. Pretty soon, the daydream will override the negative thoughts from your subconscious, and they'll just break apart and disappear, and you'll develop a new viewpoint of life. Your psyche will change. Number two on his list is always wear a smile, even if things seem sad or depressing. The point here is that, and the Chinese used to teach this years ago, if you have a smiley outside, even though you may have problems inside, it does lead to a connection at some point where the smiley, happy persona you're carrying around does have some effect. So if you're a person wanting to keep yourself in good humor and so forth, he suggests keeping a happy smile all the time. Because it promotes a positive way of thinking. And you have to learn to, reinforce that positive thinking. Another thing which most people don't think about, which is this third golden rule of positive thinking, is your posture, your material self. Keep good posture. It's interesting how poor posture not only reflects poor thinking and poor attitudes, but when you talk to these people, they're probably making themselves sick. So keep a good posture. And that means keep your head up high, your shoulders back. It speaks well for your attitude, self-reliance, confidence, and your material self definitely has effect on how you're thinking, and vice versa. So make a point when you find yourself slumping over or, stoop shoulder or your eyes down low. You see people all the time who can't look you in the eye, or their head's always hanging down. Well, Stand up straight and look straight ahead when you do things. When you talk to someone, look them directly in the eye. I watch for this all the time. And most of the time I find that 90% of the people can't look you in the eye consistently. They'll look at you in the eye, then look away, and they look the other way. Some people have to look down all the time. These are people with a definite lack of confidence. You know, they don't have any power in their thoughts. There's very little force to what they're really thinking. They're embarrassed. They're wandering off. They can't look you straight in the eye and really communicate with you 100%. That's important. Watch yourself as you do that. And just notice how you do it. You might not even be aware of how you look away a lot when you're talking to someone and kind of daydream. You just make the casual eye contact, you know, so just enough so that they know you're talking to them. But work on that. Look directly into the eyes of the other person when you're talking. And another key that goes along with is accurately observe nature and all of its surroundings. Now, we don't do that. We go through life just recognizing things. Oh, there's a car, there's a tree, there's a stop sign, blah, blah, blah. Start taking the time to accurately observe nature and your surroundings around you without making judgments about it. Just as we discussed in the meditative immersion, let nature speak to you. Learn to observe and learn to hear from the world around you. Okay. He also has in there what he calls, the 10 ideas of good spiritual health. He calls them like laws and so forth, but I prefer to think of them as just kind of good ideas that are helpful for a person. You might want to write these down even on a piece of paper and just kind of hang it on the wall, because these are basic ideas that you can keep aware of and work into your daily or weekly practice of life, and they will be of benefit to you to help you keep kind of a healthier, happier spiritual life. The first one is to spend a lot of time out of doors, take in as much fresh air as possible. Take long hikes or strolls into the woods. Now, this is especially a good one for me because I've spent the last 8-10 years being a computer programmer by profession, and I have spent more than my share of time in a small room somewhere at a computer screen forgetting what time it is and what it looks like outside. So it's kind of a lonely profession where most of my work is just by myself. And I continually have to tell myself to go outside, to stop every now and then. So I have to force myself to go get on my bicycle and ride to the post office or do something. So I'm a little guilty of this one. I keep rationalizing that I got to work a little harder, just a little longer, got to finish this project, make just a little bit more money, get a few more hours in, push, push, push. So I'm kind of guilty of that one. It's important to get out of doors, to mix with nature, to get out of your room, out of your office where you're at. You need fresh air. Besides, you need the sun to hit you at least an hour a day. The sun helps program the cells in your body, which keeps your body clock in balance. If you stay out of the sun too much, your body clock gets off, you start wanting to stay up irregular hours, and your sleep suffers from it. So the sun has to hit your body, usually a minimum of an hour a day. So get outside. Okay? Number two, shout out loud. Use a name that is a special feeling for you, like a loved one or a role model. Now here I don't mean in the house. I mean taking walks. Go out and take walks in the woods and so forth and go hiking or wherever you need to, or maybe if you're a jogger, whatever you like to do, and shout out loud. Maybe shout a name of somebody that you like, or Rocky or Marilyn Monroe or whatever you want to shout out there. The idea is that by shouting, you loosen up the depressing feelings that are inside of you, and that tightness we get from being too enclosed or too negative about life, it'll make you feel freer. Looser, and it'll make you act more cheerful. And if you have a sense of humor, you'll probably wind up laughing at yourself. Maybe you want to yell Bugs Bunny or Peter Rabbit or something silly that makes you, you know, laugh a little bit. So what you're doing here is you're breaking an attitude. If you find yourself locked inside too much, not getting out enough, or things aren't going well, go for a nice walk and shout and yell. And you'll find that, you know, it will change your attitude. While you're out hiking, sing happy songs. Try doing that. It works about the same as like the voice, and when you do it, sing out very loudly. Besides singing, rhythms and so forth and tones are good for the body. The sound, the vibration goes through the body and changes how you feel about things. Singing is good for us. Doesn't make any difference if you're any good at it. Doesn't make any difference if you can't carry a tune at all. Probably helps, because then if you can't sing at all, you'll probably break up laughing at yourself trying to sing something. But sing. It's exhilarating. It gets you into a cheerful, positive state of mind. Most importantly, it breaks up negative, depressed, closed-minded thinking. Try to walk barefoot as much as possible. I talked earlier about reflexology and how all of your the nerve endings in your feet are connected to different organs in your body. Do that. Go out and walk on uneven, grassy ground. Take those shoes off. And even take short runs if you want to, you know, to jog the body up a little bit and stimulate your feet and your legs. After you've been walking or running, whatever you like to do, stop and rest on your walks. And when you stop and rest, engage in a beautiful daydream that causes you just to get lost in your fantasy. Maybe you see yourself as the world's greatest runner, the world's greatest scientist. You've just solved the mysteries of life or whatever it is. But learn to daydream well. Daydreams, we're not talking about, you know, creating worlds that are impossible. I'm not talking about being led astray by fantasies. You don't want to become a fantasy head. The idea is, though, you want to be able to daydream and think of good ideas. You know, most of all of our good ideas come from daydreaming the impossible and knowing that it is possible, that we can go out and do it. So learn to daydream well. Just don't lose sight of reality. Okay, number six, observe everything in detail when you're out there walking around. Look at those flowers and animals and trees and birds and everything that you're out there looking at. Precise observation of nature loosens up all these neutral and positive thoughts that are inside of you. It kind of makes them flow around. Thereby, they fasten themselves in your memory and develop concentration. And that leads to powerful thinking. In other words, what we want to do, carefully observe nature. Let it talk to you. See things as they really are. It will open up new ideas. It will break down some of your closed-mindedness that you have. And it forces your thinking to become more concentrating because you really see things the way they are. Number seven is think honestly about your own actions and words. Be a critic of yourself. Most of us can't face ourselves. Most of us go out in the world and just say whatever we need to say to get ahead, or, you know, we look one way or another, or we dress to impress people. And in our day-to-day society, a certain amount of that seems to be needed, if you think that way. But for the most of us, for everybody, it's important that you be honest with yourself. Maybe you want to spend 2 or 3 minutes in front of the mirror every morning with no clothes on, just looking at yourself and being honest about yourself. Look in the mirror, look at your face, your hands, your belly, your rear end, your legs, your lips, whatever, and take a close analysis of yourself and be honest with yourself. The body you are living in is a reflection of how you think. Okay? Dwell on that one for a while. Number eight, secrets should be kept with confidence and integrity. If somebody tells you something and asks you to keep it a secret, most people can't do it. Or they might just say, well, don't tell anybody that, you know. So you think later on, well, it wasn't a big secret. I'll just tell a little bit of that. That's pretty interesting stuff. Don't do that. Learn to really have integrity of self with yourself and with your friends. It's important because as you build integrity, you know you have integrity, and that reaffirms your self-reliance and confidence about yourself. You feel better about yourself when you have integrity because you know it. Work on that. It's a very strong thing. Number nine, always speak slowly and deliberately, but of course with control and friendliness. Well, we naturally speak more with control and more deliberately as the world becomes clearer to us. As you can approach life with clearer thinking, powerful thinking, and as you understand yourself better, you naturally will do that. But as you're working towards that, you can control yourself. Speak at a speed which is comfortable for you. Don't speak real fast where you kind of run off and then you kind of stutter, you know, and you forget what you're going to say. A lot of people do that. They speak nervously or they go so fast they kind of have to say something 4 times before they ever get their point across because they can't express themselves. Well, slow your mouth down so it's matched up with the speed of your brain. Okay? Number 10. Absolute honesty and integrity with yourself and others is most important. Well, that's a dandy, and that's probably the best one of all of them. If anything, we need a little more integrity in our world. Most people, unfortunately, have rationalized that integrity is not a big deal anymore. Money is the big deal. And we do whatever we need to do or whatever we need to say to get the money. You know, if we're a head of a corporation or a doctor, an attorney, or an architect, whatever we are, for most of us, we've learned to, like, kind of skid around the rules and so forth and do whatever we need to do to get a little more money. Well, we know it's not the right thing to do, but it's the kind of society that we live in, at least right now. It may be changing rapidly. So that's 10 pretty good ideas for you there to help you through life. You may have your own way of wording them. You may even have, you know, some of your own, but you might want to make out a list and hang it on the wall of just suggestive ideas based on these comments that kind of help you keep aware of yourself and your growth and how healthy you are in life. Okay, we're just about to wrap up these two tapes on developing and care of the psyche. I have a few ideas of my own I kind of want to give you in summary here for you to think about. Maybe just a few guidelines, kind of step by step, one you can go through to kind of like changing your life. And you don't need to write these down or anything unless you want to. First of all, I think you should start by developing a clear understanding and awareness of the idea of creation and its logic. On the two creation tapes, we go over that very clearly and explain about the idea of creation. I think it's important that we understand the logic of how our universe is coming forward. Of course, at this point, you and I technically don't have any way to verify that this is really happening, but start to have a little faith that later on that your spirit will develop powerfully enough to actually come in connection with it to reaffirm the idea. Look over and dwell on the idea of the seven steps of development of human life. Think about it until it's clear and meaningful. Read over those steps and think about what they mean. Start enforcing the idea in your mind that we are spiritual beings going through material lives for a purpose and for a reason. That you and your persona right now, your personality, are actually adding information to this spiritual energy form. That you are a part of it. You might even want to consider the fact that once you pass on, that's all the input you as a personality can add to this spirit. What are you leaving for the next personality that your spirit's going to create? What did the last one leave for you? So you might want to look at it like that. Learn to practice the meditation exercise. That exercise, breathing through your nose, is wonderful for concentration. You have to learn to be able to concentrate on a single thing. If you cannot focus on thoughts and concentrate on them, you can't build any sort of power in your thinking. You'll just run from thought to thought very fleetingly. Concentration is very important. Learn to develop clear thinking through your keen observation of the world around you. And that'll get better as you go along. Learn to really observe things and let them speak to you. See them as they really are and learn from them. Start using the meditation immersion techniques, using the candle, the glass, or whichever you like, and learn to actually immerse yourself down using the colors. Program your subconscious to understand what the colors mean and put some time into it. Do it regularly, every day perhaps for 10 or 15 minutes or whatever you like to do. And you will notice immense force of self-will, and it will start to change your life. Learn to be honest with yourself and work on self-improvement. That's a real tough one. We all think we're going to do that, but most of us are so busy just being ourselves that we don't have any time for self-improvement. I'm hopeful that a lot of the things that I've been talking about here can provide you some inspiration and some logic and so forth, building blocks to start on your own self-improvement. We all want a happier, better life. Examine your own human condition, your emotions. Find where your psyche is. Sit down with a piece of paper and write out who you are. Write out all about your feelings and attitudes about life, your approach to life. That's what your psyche is. Learn to use the boomerang. Concentrate very strongly on a certain thought and send it out and wait. Wait for those feelings to come back, that boomerang effect that comes back that gives you a different kind of charge or idea about the thought that you sent out. And then learn to be honest with it. You can start reprogramming yourself then through meditation and daydreaming. When you're honest with discovery about yourself and you find that you have certain problems in certain areas, certain things you want to better about yourself, you can certainly do it. Develop the pause, as I call it, to constantly access your higher self and make it part of your daily life. Through meditation, you'll learn to be able to concentrate and develop that pause, that split second, where you've told yourself to allow the wisdom from your spiritual self to come over and give you a hunch, give you a good idea, and observe things very clearly before you move on. Constantly see all other life forms as a spiritual part of creation. They are. I mean, we're sharing this planet and this universe with all sorts of living beings. Right now we're mostly concerned on our own planet. But start looking, most importantly, at other people as spiritual beings on their own path of evolution. Don't look at it with your material mind making value judgments about, oh, they're fat or they're ugly or they're black or they're blue, whatever. You know, catch yourself doing this and stop it. Start looking at this individual and just see him as a spiritual being with no value judgments and let him speak out to you. You'll feel his spirit. You'll feel his consciousness and you'll look at him with a whole different light. Peace on earth will only be gained through this way when we can all visualize each other as spiritual beings and learn to love one another through that. Always find a way to make your world a little better through your own input. Learn to love all things and strive to be happy. Always keep something going to keep you a creative part of yourself moving and an intellectual part of yourself moving. Force yourself, if you have to go out and learn to play a guitar, a piano, sing, whatever it takes. Look into some kind of science. Educate yourself. Don't let your brain get stagnant. Develop your own habits and discipline to constantly monitor and see yourself. What I mean is watch out all the time for negative thoughts becoming part of you, where you say, I can't do it, or it's too tough, and so on. You can do anything that you can conceive. Strive to always try out new information. Keep that open mind. Allow the negative thoughts to come in, the positive thoughts, but just see them as they are. Crunch over them, you know, try them out, boomerang them, whatever you need to do. But keep an open mind. It's not only a sign of intelligence, but it's the only way you're ever going to learn anything. Consider the other viewpoint. And lastly, before I leave you on this subject, let me leave you with kind of an unusual one. I want to suggest to you that you begin to start thinking about programming your spirit for your next lifetime. Think about how you may want to live it, what kind of wisdom you really want to pass on to your spirit for the next lifetime. When the next lifetime's personality comes along, it benefits from how you end this one. One thing, you can program your gender if you want to be male or female. Think about that. Think about perhaps how fast you'd like to come back or where. Start taking a hand in controlling your life cycles. Interesting idea. Well, I hope the information on these two tapes can be helpful to you in some point in your life. So learn to develop that psyche, learn to control your thoughts. Let's clean up the subconscious mind of the planet Earth. There's over 5 billion people on Earth. Imagine if all this kind of information could spread and suddenly 10,000 people became clear, logical thinking people with strong will, creating a future based on love and wisdom and peace. And those 10,000 people affected 10,000 more. It became 100,000 and 1 million and 1 billion. My, within 10 years, perhaps we could get the entire planet thinking clearly and logically. That is the future of the planet Earth. And it's your call to have a hand in shaping that destiny. So first of all, get your own self together, get your own power together, and your subconscious then can start having an effect on the future of the planet Earth, of your spirit. You become a power thinker. To diseases, breakdowns, closed-mindedness, any number of things. Talking about concentration, I'll discuss reflexology just a little bit.